straightforward. And the Shulchan Aruch outlines a threefold chiyuv of Mila, starting with the father, which is outlined in Siman Reish Samach. And Reish Samach Aleph then continues that if the father is lax in his obligation to do a Mila on his child, so the Beis Din has to take over. Presumably here it doesn't mean a formal Beis Din, it means the Beis Din as representative of Klal Yisrael has to take over to do the Mila. And if the Beis Din doesn't do it, when the child's still on the Bar Mitzvah, so when the child is already Bar Mitzvah, so then the obligation devolves upon the person himself. And then the Shulchan Aruch writes that if the child did not do Mila, so he is Chayav Karis. And there's a machlokes who've shown him whether you chayav karis every single day for not doing mila, from the perspective of the child who already grew up and is already bar mitzvah, or only at the time of death. The Rambam holds you chayav karis every day, and the Ravid holds you chayav karis every day, and the Rambam holds that you only chayav karis b'shas misa. Presumably he's talking about karis la'ol me'olam haba. The Ramah, interestingly, takes a stance on this. He says, "B'chol yom over ba'on shemelu." So he seems to pass in like the Ravid against the Rambam, as the Bir Hagra on Os Beis points out. Just to take a closer look at
the
Ramah, "B'chol yom over ba'on shemelu," quoting the Torah, and the Gra points that out, that this is against the Rambam. Just dwelling on each of these aspects in turn for a moment. The obligation originally rests with the father. The Ramah even notes that you can't take away that obligation from the father, meaning you can't do the Mila without the father's permission. It's just the father is shirking his responsibility, he's not doing it. So then you step in and you have to do it for him and as the role of the basin. What does that mean that the father has to do the Mila? So this is elaborated upon a little bit, Miza, by the Pitzchei Tshuva in Sifkat and Beis, here in Siman Reish Samach Aleph. There's actually a mistake in the Pitzchei Tshuva. It's listed as Reish Samach. It should be Reish Samach Aleph. Sifkat and Beis, and also discussed a little bit in Siman Reish Samach Aleph, Sifkat and Aleph in the Pitzchei Tshuva. What emerges from putting these sources together with the sources that they're quoting, is there seem to be three separate positions as to what the obligation of the father to do Mila is. The extreme position is that the father has to do Mila like the father has to put on tefillin. So it's the obligation of the father to take his hand and cut off the orla of his child and remove the priya, and he has to do it himself. And just like, as the Mefarshim elaborate why, but just like you can't be mekayim mitzvahs tefillin al yidei shliach, you can't have someone else put on tefillin for you, so you cannot have somebody do the mila for you. So if the mohel would, if a father would hire a mohel to do the mila, so that, simply speaking, and again we'll see the subcategories of this shita, but the simply speaking, so the father is saying, listen, I can't do it, so I'm giving it over to the basin to do it. So that's what the simple reading of certain sources, which we'll quote in a moment where it comes from, is that Mila is also Chavis Haguf. By Yomal Avraham, that they quote that pasuk, by Yomal Avraham, es Yitzchak Beno, Chavis Haguf. Yes.
The difference is,
when
you say someone's putting on
tefillin
for you, you can put
tefillin
on your arm. You just can't be
yotzei
by putting a
tefillin on your arm. Okay. These are all as far as going back and forth. I'm just presenting the final package. So the ones who espouse this position are the Or Zeruah, as quoted in the Darkei Moshe, Siman Reish Samach Dalet. We'll see in a moment that the Darkei Moshe doesn't understand that Or Zeruah, that you can't make a shliach. The Or Zeruah says you cannot make a shliach for Mila, and the Darkei Moshe says, why not? Shluch Shalom Kamoso. But this is the sheet of the Or Zeruah. It also is mimicked by the Shach, and independently, without quoting the Darkei Moshe, as later Mefarshim note, that for some reason the Shach in Choshen Mishpat didn't quote this Darkei Moshe in Yerodea. Sof Simen Shin Pei Beis, dealing with the issue of the Asar Zehuvim, which I don't want to get involved in because it's off our topic, but that's a litmus test to kind of check who's right here. Because if it's my mitzvah and someone else steals it from me, so then he has to pay me 10 zehuvim. But if it's not really my mitzvah per se, then maybe they're not going to have to pay me 10 zehuvim. So that's where this plays out. But I don't want to discuss that nafkamina directly. So you have that Arzarua and the Shach who say that it seem to say that it's a mitzvah on the father to do it bi yadav, and he cannot appoint a shliach. Just recently, this is only this Mahadura of this year that I saw this machlokis, but I'm sure it's pretty old. It's not my own chiddush. It seems that position that the father has to do the milah and you cannot appoint a shliach, it seems to divide into two flavors. The first flavor, which I thought everybody who held of that position held of, but then I saw that that's not quite the case, is that you have a mitzvah as the father to do the mitzvah of milah, and you're being mevatel that mitzvah by not doing it, by having a moel do it, unless you don't know how to do it. So then you have to give it over to a moel, which is why the Shach and the Or Zura make the point, I should have stressed this, that if the father knows how to do the milah, then he may not have a moel do it because he's going to be mevatel his mitzvah. So I would have thought that that's a bitul ha-mitzvah legamri. Of course, he's giving it up to the Beis Din, to the son later when he gets older, but he's being mevatel the mitzvah totally. The Chochmas Adam, interesting Maor Mokom on this, in the Binas Adam Simen Ches Os Zayin, it's actually in Hilchos Kisi Hadam, where there's an interesting parallel about giving up the mitzvah of Kisi Hadam, whether it's the Shochet mitzvah or whether you can make a shliach. So he writes that even according to the Shach, whose Shita he tends to side with, it's only on what he calls ananaf. It's not a bittul ha-mitzvah, it's a bittul of a prat of the mitzvah. Now, what exactly he means by anaf? Is it al derech like a hidor, or is it a chelek of? So that I'll leave for further study, but it seems to me that you do have, because in other sources that quote this position, they didn't seem to make that distinction. So they called it a bittul ha-mitzvah. Chachma Sarev says clearly it's only a bittul of an anaf ha-mitzvah. And he has a raya for that, because the Gemara proposes, we'll get to it, maybe we won't get to it, so I'll mention it briefly now, that we hold that a father could do milah on Shabbos. There is a day in the Gemara, which is actually mimicked by the Rishonim, it's briefly alluded to by the Pischei Tshuva in Reish Samach, I think Sifkat and Gimel, the Ra'ah Paskins that way, that on Shabbos, you have to give it to someone else to do. And the basic logic is, it's because for the father, it's going to be a Psik Reish Denichalei of Chavala, because he wants the milah, because it's his mitzvah, and for other people it's going to be a psik reish d'lo nichalei of chavala. So it's better to lessen the iser, or maybe make it mutter totally, whatever, via aruch, so to give away the mitzvah to somebody else. So the Chachma Sarim says, give away the mitzvah! So it must be that even the Shach agrees that all you're doing is giving away an anaf of the mitzvah. And that sometimes you can't be docha Shabbos for only an anaf. Only a prat of it. So I'll leave you to look in the Makoros yourselves to your mind a little more, but it does seem that position subdivides into two. That idea that you cannot make a shliach on milah, but basically have to do it yourself, whether you're mevatel the mitzvah totally if you don't do that, or just mevatel on enough of the mitzvah, which is the position of the Chochmas Sarim. Yeah.
First, he said the shliach thing is only beishama, is the
mitzvah
that you can do
on
a shliach. So I don't understand that.
Kisi Adam?
Yeah, it's a of
no, I'm not sure.
So, yeah, I'm saying that's
a shver. I don't know. That's we have to show me. We'll learn it together.
Okay. The second shver is that if it's docha Shabbos, then what's the nafkamina because he's doing it the hetzer. In other words, I don't see that there's a difference between segregation and low.
Okay. So that might be that might be a raya to the discussion of whether milah is hutra on Shabbos or dechuy on Shabbos. That's probably one of the makoros on that. The maskana we hold the father can do it. So maybe the maskana is that it's hutra, or maybe the maskana is that kach gazra Torah even if it is only dechuya. So that's yeah, certainly you could look into. So that's the first shita. The second shita is that the father it's his mitzvah to do the milah, but just like you could apply shluch l'shalom kamoso concerning other mitzvos, you could apply shluch l'shalom kamoso here too. So when you appoint a moel, you're appointing a shliach to do the mitzvah. So it is true that mitzvah bo yosem mi bishlucho, and all things being equal, even according to that position, if the father knows how to do it, he should do it himself. But he still would be mekayim his mitzvah even if he appoints a shliach. The ones who espouse this position, that the father is obligated in the mitzvah himself, but he can appoint a shliach in order to fulfill his obligation, leaving aside the lechachila of mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho, is the Darkei Moshe himself, in Siman Reish Samach Dalet, in arguing on the Orech HaRuah. The Pischei Tshuva in Siman Reish Samach Dalet is Sifkat Nalef, in arguing on the Shach, quoting the Tshuvas Yad Eliyahu, as well as the Tvu Ashor, in the context of Kisui Adam. It's the Mashmos of the Machaber in Siman Reish Samachei, Si'if Tes, where the Mechaber writes that the father should stand next to the Moel, Lehodia Shehu Shlucho. Certainly taking that Mechaber literally, unless you say it's Lav Davka. And also the Bir Hagra in Simen Reish Samach Hey, Sif Katan, Lamed Hey, in dealing with the issue of Shechiyano, which hopefully we'll get to later. Also, at least Bedasa Rambam, he writes that Shlucho Shalom Kamoso. And as you mentioned earlier, also the Tvu Ashor and Yerodea Simchav Ches. As we mentioned, though, all things being equal, if the father knows how to do the milah, so we would apply mitzvah bo yosemi b'shluchim. The tvu ashor is mechadesh that you could be mevater on mitzvah bo yosemi b'shluchim in order to be mechabed somebody. If you want to be mechabed a particular person to do a mitzvah, he says it in the context of kisi adam, but presumably it would apply to milah as well. And the Chochma Sodom writes that even according to those who say it works with a shliach, but still, it shouldn't be too much of an afkamina, because mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho, and you should not give up your mitzvah in order to be mechabit somebody. You should do it on your own. But the big nafkamina between positions 1 and 2 is whether the father is mekayim his mitzvah if he appoints a shliach. The first position holds you not mekayim it, and the second position holds you are mekayim it. There is a third position, which is the position of the Tosafot read in Kiddushin, in the sugya of Mila, as well as the Maharil in the name of the Gaonim, as quoted by that same Binas Adam at the very end of his discussion of this issue, that it is neither a mitzvah on the father himself to do the milah, nor is it a mitzvah on the father himself to do the milah which he can make a shliach for, but it is a mitzvah to arrange the milah. So not a mitzvah to cut. The mitzvah of the father is to arrange the milah, to see to it that it's done. So that's different from the second position. The second position is that it's his mitzvah, but it's mekayim al yedei shliach. The third approach is that his mitzvah is to arrange it to see it done, to make the call, to hire the moel. Of course, the nafkamin is that you have to formally appoint the moel as a shliach, or at least does that have to be the intent? If it's just to be masader, so when you called him, you're masader it. If you hold like day two, then you have to make him a shliach. If you hold like day one, it's not going to help to make him a shliach. So we are noeg, let me rephrase that, many moalim are noeg to have the father right before the milah to appoint them as a shliach. And then some people throw in a machna Ephraim that a poel is better, that maybe even according to the shach, if you're a hired worker, so you could certainly, liyad poel ki yad balabayis. So if you're paying the moel, maybe even the shach would be happy. So that's a further discussion. Some people I know I actually to give over the knife. I don't know if that's a halachic reason or just kind of to be mal at a das, that I am really being appointing him as a shliach. So you have those different positions, and I get the impression that the consensus of the poskim is that it's either like they are two or three, not one. That with all of the fortune that seems to say that way, the shach, and it's actually as a mocker based on a rush, the original mocker of the Asar Zehuvim, and the Orech HaRuah, but I think the majority of the poskim, the Gra and the Shulchan Aruch, they seem to side with the middle or the last approach. So that's the mitzvah of the Av to be moel. Then you have the Beis Din. The Beis Din is supposed to be moel. So I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you have to have a formal yeshiva's Beis Din to have a psak, you have to mal the child. It means, like when we learn Sanhedrin, the Beis Din of judicial Beis Din is the Beis Din of representative Beis Din. This is a representative Beis Din. It's Klal Yisrael's obligation. And if there's a local court in town or Rabbanim in town, it's their obligation to see to it. So obviously that has to translate into a specific moel. It means that they have to see to it that someone should take care of it. So who is going to be this quote-unquote Beis Din? Who is going to be the next in line to take care of the Mila? So the Ramah, writes that the women are not only, of course, not obligated to Mila themselves, but they're not obligated to bemal their children. We'll see later about whether a woman is kosher to do milah on the child. but they're not obligated to be milder children. What does that mean? So some Rishonim understand that means they're not obligated at all. That means they're not obligated in tier 1 and they're not obligated in tier 2. They're not obligated as an Av to do the Mila, and they're not obligated as a Beis Din to do the Mila. That means if the father's not around to do it, so let someone else take care of it, be Masada of the Mila. It's not the mother's responsibility at all. But there are those who quote that the mother is actually obligated B'Toras Beis Din. And as a matter of fact, she might be the next in line. Because if the father can't do it, so maybe the mother, having the most affinity to the child, is the closest representative of the quote-unquote Beis Din that we have in order to do the Mila. I should have given this by way of introduction, but there are those who quote, usually means the Sefer HaBris. There's an encyclopedic work on Mila called the Sefer HaBris, which was available on the shelf in the Beis Medrash, but wasn't right before this year, so I guess someone took it off the shelf. Very good. It's a little bit too much to be a usable Sefer for Halacha L'maisa. What do I do on this detail? But it's a wonderful Sefer HaLimud. It has a Kitzer Psakim and the Chelek Halacha, and it has Be'urim. And just as a reference work for the future, it has a fantastic analysis of Zmanei Hayom in general. Mamish Keitzer from A to Z, with the Rishonim and the Gaonim, and all the way down to the Achroni Achronim. And also the whole topic of irreligious Jews. There's a massive discussion on that. About a Mumer and a Mumer La called Tarkula, because it comes up in Mila. So he branches out much more than just his local application to Mila. And so just as a Mar Mokum, if you ever look into those topics in the future, it's probably a good place to stop. Sefer HaBris, Rabbi Piratinsky, who was a Moel himself. I think he's an old man by now, probably close to retiring, if not totally retired. But it's Mamish, it's like a Stechemet. Everything under the sun. And then there's a few Svarim, Halacha L'maisa, and more like Shmir Shavos Kachasa style on Mila. One I think is called the Otzar HaBris, which is a very usable Sefer in this regard. I haven't really looked at it too much, but I think it should be good. And other Svarim as well. But the Sefer HaBris is more of a Sefer Limud. So that most of the Makaros that I'm quoting from outside are pretty much from the Sefer HaBris. I wanted to just be mitzayin the following. Within this obligation of Beis Din, so there are a few Pischei Tshuvis who seem to indicate, putting it all together, that this obligation of Beis Din, just as we pointed out, there are some who say that the obligation devolves on the mother, B'toras Beis Din. So Hakarav Karav Kodin, that's what it seems to emerge from the various Pischei Tshuvis. Take, for example, the Pischei Tshuva in Reish Samach Dalet Yudei, who writes that if you have an apotropis who wanted to do the Mila, so the brother of the child should come first. He has first crack. What do you mean he has first crack? The Torah is what? He's not the Av. So it has to be Beis Din. Beis Din. Formal Beis Din. He's a Karav. He's puzzled to be the Beis Din. So that means this is a representative of Klal Yisrael. So the closer you are to the child, you have more of an obligation to see to it. So the brother comes before the apotropos. That's the Pischei Tshuva. And he could even insist on it. The apotropos wants to do it. He says, no, I'm doing it. That's Reish Samach Dalet Yud Beis. And then the Pischei Tshuva, Reish Samach Hei Gimel, also quotes Rabbi Akiva Eger that in the context of who should recite the bracha of Lachniso, Bevriso Shel Avram Avinu, which seems to be related to this topic, that the grandfather should have precedence over the Sandik. So it seems to be a similar idea, that the Karav Karav Kodim here in terms of the role of the Beis Din. And then finally, the child's obligation himself. So that would, in terms of the Yisakaris we already discussed, and I guess, I don't know, unless you're going to be Mechalik in the Chiyuvim, according to the first position we had earlier, he would be Mechuyiv to be Mal himself, and he can't make a Shliach, unless you say that obligation is different. Once you're ready to evolve to that, then everyone holds he can make a Shliach, or everyone holds the mitzvah just to arrange it. Because it's hard to operate on yourself, whether in that level, whether that has the same three shittas about the nature of the meal, the nature of the mitzvah. Okay. The Ramah alludes to the fact that when you don't have there's no father around, and the Beis Din has to do it, you got to get it done. And what if there's a Moel who knows how to do it, but he insists on salary? So the Rashba screams at him, "You got to do mitzvahs." So ain't that dark and shall zer Avram? You have to do the mitzvah, and the Pischei Tshuva quotes, you could even promise him salary and then don't give it to him. because he has a chiyuv to do it for free. So the Sefer Bris takes opportunity to discuss. So you mean to say the $500 fee, as Rabbi Tendler mentioned, the standard going rate for Mila, it's all Avera. So he points out that this is the old shiloh of taking money from mitzvahs and the schar batala, and the same things apply here as well. That if a mile is a full-time mile, this is his job, and he can't be a Wall Street investment banker, and he can't be a Rebbe, whatever, which is also schar batala. So he's allowed to take money, so he could devote his life to Mila. So that's why there's some mohalim, like across town, I forgot what's the Rabbi Katzenstein, who's Baruch Hashem in business in separate fields. So he doesn't take money for the Mila, or he just makes out the check to Stavka. And many Molin make out a check to themselves, and they have a right to, because that's their profession. But that's Al Pi Halacha, it's Tzchar Batala, not Tzchar Mitzvah. That's what seems to emerge here, because you can't really take money per se for the Mila itself. Same thing in medicine. Sometimes Tzchar Batala is a lot. Okay. All right, let's move on to Simon Reish Samach Beis. The Zman of Mila, the Shulchan Aruch writes, the Lechachila, the Zman of Mila, is from sunrise on the eighth day of the birth. And the Ramah adds, based on the Mishnah and Megillah, concerning all the other mitzvot, set of mitzvot and beyond, that Yotze as early as dawn. But the Lechachila is supposed to be sunrise. And I think the Sefer Bris close discussion, what if you have clocks and things like that, I think the consensus of the poskim is that this is at the Takanat Chazal. And even if you have clocks and you know it's for sure after dawn, you still should wait till after sunrise. So that becomes a little bit of an issue in the winter months, still nowadays. Sometimes shkia till late at 7:20. So people are going to work. So even if you're going to have an early shachris, where they are coolest, having a shachris before Nates, even though the Shulchan Aruch writes a chachila shmon esrei should be after. But the mila should be after Nates. And whatever, shasat chakadol is the only time to do it, so then fine. But shasat chakadol is not to have a minyan. And Shasat Chakotl is not to have a Seuda. Shasat Chakotl means that you only don't do the Mila. I guess one can make a case that you could either do the Mila before sunrise, after dawn, or do it on day 9. So maybe Mila Bizman is Adif here to violate that Lechachil Derabbanan. But just to have a minion and just to have more people there, certainly not. You would have to delay till after sunrise. Within this regard of Mila being during the day, so the Mechaber writes that the whole day is kosher, at least day 8. There's no bittul hamitzvah at all if you do it at any point during day 8. But the reason makdimin lamitzvahs. We learn it from Avraham Avinu, we ask him from baboker. So the language of the Mechaber is umolin miyad baboker. The reason makdimin lamitzvah, umolin miyad baboker. So the Sefer Bris seems to indicate that the reason makdimin really has like two tiers here. There's the molin miyad baboker, which is the Mechaber, the sooner the better. And then there's kind of like a plateau. Try to get it in before Chatzos, so it should be Baboker. Presumably the Mokers. Ma'amavino Yashim Ram Baboker. But I got the impression that Zrizan Makdimin doesn't mean do it before Chatzos. Zrizan Makdimin means do it as soon as possible after sunrise. But really don't delay before Chatzos, because that's going to be like a real bittle of Zrizan. Different sliding scale of Zrizan. The reason I mention this is because the Pesachei Tshuva critiques the Chazanim who sing Nigunim on Shabbos, delaying the bris past Chatzos on Shabbos, because we always do a bris after davening. Tadir v'sheina tadir, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, and the others for us, why we do it after davening. Why don't you do it before? The Machronim has got to do it before. So there's a reason like the Saraisa. They say tadir v'sheina tadir, or other terutzim, but he shouldn't delay after Chatzos. I was already mevatel. I'm not doing it at 9 o'clock because Shabbos davening takes at least till 10:30, 11. What if only it's 11:30? So that seems to be a plateau of the reason to try to get it in before Chatzos. Of course, if you didn't, so you do it after. Yes.
Is there any concept of the reason about the mitzvah while you're involved with another mitzvah?
But the question was, what gave you the right to get involved in that davening? Why don't you do a mila first? Once you already started the davening, so to stop the davening is one issue, but why don't you do the mila first? So that's the Aruch HaShulchan discusses this. I didn't check it up inside, so I quoted, and I think the other truth in too. But
what's the reason we don't do mila before davening?
Well, I think the Aruch HaShulchan writes Tadir Shein Tadir, Tadir Kodin. And then he also writes, at least during the week, you have talis and tefillin together, so it's a mitzvah that's a package deal mitzvah, and mila is only one mitzvah.
So, but it's so taking that into consideration, and once you started,
but you don't have to sing. You don't have to sing. Yeah, he's not talking about rushing. He's talking about singing chazonis. The Mishnah Berurah screens the Chazanim for delaying till Chatzos even without a milah, because people are going to be fasting till Chatzos and not going to have this with the Shabbos. He's not talking about a niggun or two. He's not talking about, you know, the old Chazanim. It's a dying art. It used to be davening, you know, they say four hours. Yeah, the Chazan came to town. You know. Yeah, it's all discussed. Mamas, to save everybody, has everything. He goes in the Shagasari, the Rabbana, and the Raisa, one's called Makudash, and he's from Falpo. Okay. But the bottom line is, you daven first. You have to hold the Bilpulim, that's what you do. Okay. I don't know, but I think here, everyone agrees to this, the Maskana. You know, the way Rav Chaim used to say, Kant Relirin, via the Shulchan Aruch, right? Whatever lumbus you have, you always have to, you always have to control it with. Okay. That's a good point, and these are all issues, the details of this reason that are all written about in the Sefer Bris, because it could very well be that you can't even break the original's reason for that. Maybe that's not enough of a tzorach. I think he quotes the Beferish Machlokes Achronim on that. Even to the extent that maybe some say you could even wait till after Chatzos to have more people, but the consensus is that no, Peres Chatzos that for sure not. And I think that many posts can say that even to delay it later in the day, you should not. I was just pointing out that the Chatzos is a real, that's a greater plateau, but it doesn't mean that the earlier plateau you could violate for anything either. So I don't want to spend the time in this. I'll be mitzayin one case, one or two cases where it's reason it maybe can be foregone, and I will refer you to the Sfarim on Mila for extra cases, because these cases do come up. To have more of a crowd, it's the consensus of the poskim that you certainly don't delay Pesach Chatzos, and I got the impression you don't even delay at all. You do it as early as possible, even if you can have less of a crowd. Another issue that comes up is, what about if you have a better moel? So a better moel, you could forego this reason. But if you do it on day 8, you do it on day 8. And then there's another question that comes up, a milah on a tainus. So what some wanted to do, or suggested to do, was have the milah samach l'shkia, so you can go straight into the suda after tzeis. But you can have it in the morning, so either you're going to have to call them twice, or have a milah without food, and then have a short family affair later at home. So the consensus of the poskim, I think, is to do the latter. You have the milah in the morning, with no food. And whatever, you can get people later. It'll probably be much smaller than it could have been, because people are usually not going to come out at night just for the Suda. But I think that's the consensus. There might be days the other way, but that is the consensus. Rav Zimmerman, when he was here, Rav Braunschweigel, when he used to give the Shurim on Mila before Rabbi Tendler switched into that slot, shifting around. So he pointed out a shaila, something to be asked, that let's say you have a meal in a bungalow colony. So here, Mela, so I'll come back for the suda. The really close friends will come back at night. But if it's in a bungalow colony, you're not going to travel twice. So that means that your mamish is not going to be able to get a crowd for the suda. So maybe then you could be mevatel's reason? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. So you'll have you'll go to next door bungalow and you'll get a minion, and you know, who says you need it for that either? So these are some of the shailas to come up in terms of his reason, and there are many others as well. Yeah. But Suda doesn't say you need a minion, says you need a minion for the, you should have a minion for the bris. That's also discussed. Can you be Mavatl's reason to have a minion for the bris? That I think is somewhat of an open question in the Sefer Bris. It all gets involved in Hidur Mitzvah versus reason. Which wins? And there are Makoros back and forth. Rovam, there's a Malkam Rosh Hashanah, and there's a Trumas Edeshan. So a lot of Makoros on this, about priorities and halacha, which wins. Yes. Brachas? Rachamans? I don't know if you need a minion for the Rachamans. I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I don't think that's going to allow you to move off for this reason. Yeah. You could have the suda later. You could have the suda later. It was on a tainus. You're not mevatel any reason of anything. You have this reason early. You have the suda later. The only thing is, you might be mevatel the majority of people at the suda. Okay, so maybe that's not that seems to be the consensus that that's not enough of a reason. Yeah.
So I thought I learned in the Mishnah Berurah, dealing with Tishbav and Shavuot with Thomas, that the moil and the father don't fast, but it's not a matter of suda, they still eat.
Yeah, I think the consensus of the poskim is unless a nitcha, they do fast.
They do fast.
It is a discussion, it's not clear cut, okay. But unless it's a nitcha, they do fast. If you want, on the margin, for some reason, they printed on the margin of the Yoredeya Tshuvas HaRadvaz, who says that explicitly, and I think that's the consensus, that a Tainus is mana, everyone fasts.
What's going to be the connection of the food that you make in the evening towards the Bishmila? How do you say that? What's the chance?
Yeah, so that's what they point out, that it's not wild. You could have it. You could have it a day later. They quote from the earlier Rishonim even, that you could have the food of life. You didn't do it, you do it later, day after. So it's still shaykh. They point out, if you look in the discussion, you see, it could be that there's a Trumas Deshen who says, delay the Pidyon HaBen in order to have the Suda at the same time, instead of doing the Pidyon HaBen on day 30, when Shabbos is 31, so do the Pidyon HaBen on Motzei Shabbos. There's eyes, reason, why don't you rely on Lonis Aklu Hamos and that whole thing, and you'll have the Suda later. Well, we don't want to split up the Suda. But it could be Pidyon HaBen is different, because Pidyon HaBen, the whole Takana Sasuda there was to kind of enhance the mitzvah. That's why the minig is to wash first, and you do the Pidyon there. Mila itself, that's the Iker mitzvah, and then you're supposed to make a simcha for it. But in Pidyon HaBen, there's a tighter connection. So that's why the Miyashe, the Shemus Deshin allowed the delay because of Pidyon HaBen. But in Mila, even he wouldn't necessarily allow the rigging or being mevater on Zrizin in order to get an extra decision. Okay. Yeah, I think we have to move on. Otherwise, we'll stick on this Zrizin topic. We won't be Zrizin for the Chazara. Okay. Good. Mila Shalob is mana, although it's not on day 8, still has to take place during the day. I think it's actually Machlokes in the Gemara. We pass in Lechum on there. It has to take place during the day. Okay. There is a Pitzchei Tshuva, just one last line on this reason. He quotes a Nod Yehuda that when you have a Mila Shalob Bizmana, you should not delay it further than you have a green light from the doctors to go ahead. His case was a complicated case. They wanted to delay it till Erev Pesach to get out of fasting. They didn't invent the Siyam yet. So he said, no, don't do that. So he says, why? So the twist is that who says that's enough of a simcha, the su'udah for a mila shalob ismana to get you out of fasting? So maybe it doesn't even work. But even if it does work, don't delay it. So give some curious reasons. Maybe the child will die, chas v'shalom, and you won't be mekayim the mitzvah. And anyway, you'll be mevatel's reason. So it's not a good idea. And he has other svaras as well to say that you shouldn't do it. So this opens up a whole discussion, a very fundamental discussion with many halacha l'maaseh ramifications about what happens if a mila shalob bizmana. You blew day 8, either for medical reasons or pshia, whatever the case was. Now it's day 9. So, you certainly have reason left to do it on the earliest day possible. But do you have more than that? So here again, we have machlokesin galore. And the Sefer Brisi collects all the shittas. The simple mashmas in Noid Yehuda is that all you have is reason. Now, it's not all you have. Most Rishonim, I got the impression, say for Brishol, the reason is Dairaisa. So even Mevatel and Inyan Dairaisa. You're not Mevatel in the midst of Mila, but Mevatel's reason. Other Poiskim go further than that and say, no, every single day that you don't do the Mila, you're Mevatel in the midst of the say of Mila. Not Karis, because you're the father here, or the Beis Din, you're not the child. So it's not karis, but it's a bittul mitzvah. Every single day you don't do it. And others say, and this the ones who say what I just said now, that it's every day, seems to be the position of the Yad Eliyahu, as quoted here in the Gilyan Maharsha. And it's also quoted later in the Pitzchei Tshuva. I don't have the marker for you now, but it's the first Gilyan Maharsha here. The Yad Eliyahu writes as follows. He says that you have a mila of a Bizmana, and a mila shalob bizmana. They both need the mila now. Which one should you do? So the Yad Eliyahu says, do the mila bizmana, because chaviva mitzvah b'shaita. Aye, mila shalob bizmana, the time clock is ticking. Yeah, it's not ticking till tomorrow. You're not going to get a bitla mitzvah till tomorrow. So you better do the mila bizmana, chaviva mitzvah b'shaita. So he's assuming that you're not mevatel the mitzvah every second, maximum every day, even if it's more than Zrizin, but it's only works in discrete units, if you will, only each unit that you're able to do it, because you can't do it at night. The Dvar Avram, so he writes that you mavatlet every second. So he holds that is your mamish have to be medaktik to the second to do the mila. As soon as you have the green light, which we'll see later, is either as soon as the baby gets healthy or 7 full 24-hour days after the baby is cleared for mila. That's the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram, the Kovna Rav, is it? Gave the Rosh Halevesi Kismicha. It's on the display in the library. So he holds every second. So there are different minhagim on this. There are those who mamish, I think Rabbi Cohen, one of his sons had a delayed bris, so mamish at the time. No minion, don't worry about anything. Straight. In the hospital, you do it. And others, more makel, like the Adelio, to allow it anytime during that day, so to gather together a minion. Usually they're smaller affairs, Mila Shalobah's mana, because you can't delay from day to day. Because you'll either be mevatel the reason or you'll be mevatel the mitzvah. So those are three shittas in this regard. According to the Dvar Avram, if you have a Mila Shalobah's mana and Mila Bizmana, Mila Shalobah's mana comes first. Because all you'll do by delaying the Mila Bizmana is be mevatel a little reason. But to delay the Mila Shalobah's mana every second, you're mevatel the mitzvah. So there are different positions on that. The Sefer Bris selects. I don't know. Most of it, I think, is Achronim, but it could be. He always has, as part of the beauty of the Sefer. Mamish is also, he quotes from the Oitzer HaGoinim, Shematzasi, Viksav Yad, and he quotes everybody. So, he quotes Rabbi Yaakov HaGozer. Everybody who said anything on the topic he has. So, it could be that he dug up some Rishonim to deal with it. Okay. Might be parallel. Yeah.
I was wondering, we
discussed the Harachamon, you mentioned something about the Harachamon in the book. Yeah. Right. That you say, one of the Harachamon says, Dimishlash Eloh Yasela. So that part of your first Mitzitza. Okay. I was wondering, how do you omit that?
We do Mitzitza. Even Rabbi Tendler
allows Mitzitza in his shul. He had a pickbook on Shabbos, he had a pickbook with a tube. Okay, so that's
on Shabbos, he says no because of
the right, right, he's worried about it on Shabbos. He's not going to hold a protest sign on a shul that doesn't on Shabbos, but maybe in his shul he doesn't allow it. Well, okay. Ask the Baal HaShita. Okay, yeah, let's go. Okay, let's talk about Mila that was not done in the right time. So if it's done before sunrise, obviously it's kosher b'di'evit as long as they have to dawn. The question is if it's done toch eight, toches or biyom, toches biyom. Or Balayla. So the Shach alludes to the basic original Makoros on this, and it basically goes as follows, that the Rosh writes in Daik based on a Gemara and Shabbos that Mila Toches, if you did it Toches, you would not do Hatofes Dambris. The Gemara says that a Ger who was Nisgayer Kishahu Mohu, he already had a circumcision with the Or HaPriya removed before he became a ger, so you do Hatofes Dambris. At least that's the Maskana Rov Rishonim. It's the whole Dina of the Gemara, we pass in the Chumra on that. Similarly, a child who was born without an Orla, without an Or HaPriya, so also you do Hatofes Dambris. The question is that the only time you do Hatofes Dambris, or are any time you botch a Mila, either in time or in Gavra, meaning you use the wrong person or use the wrong time, do you also have to do Hatofes Dambris? So that's a massive dispute with Shittas and Shittas upon Shittas and nuances within Shittas. So here we discuss the time issue. The Rosh is Medayik from a Gemara in Shabbos that if you do Mila Toches, that you do not do Atavas Dambris. And the Hagoyes Maimini says that if you do Mila Balayla, that you do Atavas Dambris. So the Beis Yosef says, this is a Machlokis. And we pass him like the Rosh. So when you batch a Mila in terms of time, you do not do Atavas Dambris. The Darki Moshe, and then he quotes his compromise in the Ramah, holds it, though, they're not arguing. So Hagoyes Maimin is talking about the night, and that is a Mila Psula, and therefore you need a Tavas Dambris. And the Rosh is talking about Mila Toches, which even though the Chachili is supposed to do it on day 8, but the Evid Yotze, that's the language of the Ramah. It's actually not the language of the Rosh, but it's the language of the Ramad, it's the Yotze. So he makes a compromise. Everybody's right. The Rosh is right, the Goyes Maimi is right. And that's what he records La Halacha in the Ramah, that Amila Tolches, Noah Tafas Nambris, if it's Bayom, and Amila Balaila, even after Ches, and certainly if it's Tolches, would need Hatafas Nambris. So, what is Pshat in that Pshara of the Ramah? I refer you to a very fascinating shtickle from Abchaim in the stencils that you have in the packets. For those who are interested in the Lumdish, take a look there. It's a very nice piece. Rabbi Braunspiegel quoted it to us, that's why it's in the packet. And he pointed out that Rav Chaim is not Mokruch, that he seems to have a Raya Fakir. But okay, so you can get the old tapes in the tape library or something if you'd like to hear how he thought the Raya Fakir. But that is what the Ramah paskens. Do we accept the Ramah or not? So the Taz says no. Because at least we're machmir, like those who hold that you always need a tafas dambris. And the Shach says no with an exclamation point. That it's absolutely you need a tafas dambris, you're not yotzei in a mitzvah, and nothing to talk about. And he brings rayas from the Gemara, whatever the rayas are. Lahalacha, rechach masadam, and I think all subsequent poskim, lahalacha at least, follow Shach / Taz that you need a tafas dambris. So, whatever, if you made a mistake in calculation, it can come up, or you just blew it, whatever the case was, you thought you count the end points, you actually do, whatever the case was, you make a mistake, you have to do a tafas dambris, even if it was done al yidei Yehudi kosher, whether it's balayla or biyom. There is a shita shagas aryeh that's quoted by the Pitzchei Tshuva, who paskins like the mechaber. Actually, let me rephrase that, like the Beis Yosef, because the mechaber is totally silent about the issue. The Beis Yosef says we should say that you never need a tafas dambris, and the Shagas Aryeh paskins that way. And his logic is very straightforward, and I just wanted to share this with you because it's also important for another topic that we tend to discuss in terms of the claims. The Gemara says you do a tafas dambris in the case of a gerishin as gaya kishu mohul, and the case of a nolud kishu mohul. What do we have here? Because no ritual or non-ritual circumcision was done. There was never any maisa that was done to this child. So the Gemara concludes, or at least most Rishonim understand that the Gemara concludes, that under these circumstances, that tafas dambris serves as a substitute for the mila that you cannot do. But the Gemara never discusses a case where you remove the arla in a non-halachic way, either time-wise or by person, that you should need a tafas dambris. Shere Shagas Aryeh says, and he says he thinks this is pshat in the Rambam, and he thinks this is pshat in the Rosh too, that you're certainly not yotzei the mitzvah. Even the Rosh never held that if you do a mila tol ches that you're yotzei v'dievet. The Torah said v'yom hashmini yimol b'sar l'asom, and it meant it. It's li'ikuva. You're not yotzei the mitzvah. Not the father, not the son, not the beis din. What are you supposed to do? Hatafas dambris? He has no orla. Here's a kid who had an orla. That means he had a chiyuv of mila, halachic mila. You didn't do halachic mila, but he's not an orla. The Gemara says you do a tafas dambris when you get him halachically, either the ger shenis gayer or the child who was born without an orla. So now you have to do something, and that something is a tafas dambris. But it was an orla, but it was removed in a non halachic way, so there's nothing to do. If you will, there's nothing left to cut. So just make him bleed. Why should you make him bleed? Ah, because it's a mitzvah to make a kid bleed. There's a mitzvah to make him bleed as a substitute for mila. When there was no Arla, either because that's the way he was born, or because when you get him as a Jew, or as someone trying to enter Klal Yisrael, that he doesn't have one anymore. But if he had an Arla and it was removed, just medically, shall we say, in a non-halachic way, so there's nothing to cut. You're not Yotzei the Mitzvah, but Me'uvas lo yuchal liskon. That's the svar of the Shagas Aryeh. It's all in the packets. You can look at it by Riches, and he has Rayas to this back and forth. And if you're interested in the Lumdus, you see the Shach has an interesting Raya at this position. But once you hold like the Shagas Aryeh, his analysis of the Raya of the Shach falls away. So I wouldn't be surprised if in certain, maybe more of the Brisker circles, they might follow the Shagas Aryeh, because it's a very fundamental sheet that it seems to match many of the Makoros. But nonetheless, the accepted Sach, as the Chacham Sadam records, is to always do a toughest Nambris in all of these cases. Regardless of the fact that the Shagas Aryeh said otherwise.
Would you be able to, would it be a problem in a case like Gedol Somra? Say, not like the Shagas Aryeh, Gedol Somra, to do it, is there a problem with like Chavala?
Yeah, but they have to be Machriya and Shitas. So here the Shach is Machriya and Shitas that you have to do it. So there's no hope to follow the Shach. You're right, here it's not Pashit to go to Chumra, just Tam be Machmir, right? But on the one hand, for the Shach, we're dealing with Safek Mitzvah versus Safek Chavala. So what are the Kolalim on that? The Shach treated as Vaday. The Shach doesn't, and Rov HaPoskin seem to side with the Shach on that, either as Vaday or Safek, but your point is well taken in terms of Kolali HaPsak. One last point I wanted to mention on this, and that is as follows. Rabbi Tendler mentioned at length, with audio, visual, and the demonstrable items, that in the medical community they perform Mila with a variety of clamps. Either the Gumko clamp, which is that the Inquisition type clamp that they refer to, or the Rabbi Bronstein's, the Moyle Bronstein, not related to our Rabbi Bronstein sleeper. The Moyle Bronstein, who was a Frum fellow who created that clamp to make everyone happy, but it didn't make everyone happy. With all of the details that were reviewed as to maybe to allow it, with the V, to cut a little V so it should bleed. But the basic issue, the most major concern that the post-com had with clamps is that there's no bleeding. So? So what? There's no atavas dambris. So? Atavas dambris you have to do when you have nothing else to do. But when you have chaticha sa'orla and chaticha sapriya or asara sapriya, so that's the bris. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Chuvis, who speaks about the clamps too, some of them are Koro, some of them you have in the packets. In Orach Chaim you have it in all Yoredeya, Chelek Aleph, Simen Reish Chav Gimel, Chelek Beis, Simen Kof Yotes, Chelek Gimel, Simen Sadi Ches. So he writes, well look, the Ramah says you do a Tavas Dan Bris sometimes. And the Shach says you do a Tavas Damris always. Why? But you already removed the Orla and the Priya. So it must be that the Pshat is that you blew already. Because you weren't Yotze, those Chalakim of the Mitzvah. So at least do what you can. Hatavas Damris. Do it Behechsher. Do it on day 8, Behechsher. Or after day 8, if you did it at night and now you want to do it during the day. What does that show? That part of every Mila is a Tavas Damris. Not just as a substitute for the Hasara Sa'orla and the Chaticha Sa'orla and the Hasara Sa'priya. It's a part of every bris. And if you either have no blood come out, or you have blood come out in a non-halachic fashion, either because the person was wrong or the time was wrong, you could correct that by doing it again in a halachic fashion. The Chaticha Sa'orla and the Hasara Sa'priya, you cannot correct this. You can't correct. So Rav Moshe points out, this Ramah, and especially the Shach, the Ramah's Pshara, that sometimes you do it after the Shach, you always do it after the Bris, that's the marker for this notion that there has to be bleeding in a Bris. Is that Svara Mukhruch? Well, we saw the Shagasari holds that you don't do it after the Bris in these cases. So there's ample room to say, and I think I heard the Rabbi Shechter might have said this, and maybe it's in the Nefesh HaRav, that Rabbi Soloveitchik was Mitzadeh that way. I don't know if he said it Lahalacha, but he was Mitzadeh that way. The other way, that when it comes to a Ger, so they need a Tavas Dambris. No, they had this idea. But when it comes to a regular Milas Yisrael, a Tavas Dambris is not a Chelek integrali of the Mitzvah. But again, I don't want to put words into the Rav's mouth, but I think I heard that. I think it's in the Nefesh HaRav, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe the Peninim, or maybe I heard it orally. Okay, so...
Therefore, you wouldn't need to do...
According to... Rabbi Soloveitchik?
Right.
If you use the clamp, so with the Eved, it wouldn't be a problem because you wouldn't have to do a Tavas Dambris. So just readdressing that issue, the clamps usually make bloodless surgery. Either the Bronstein, if you use it well, if you use it the way it's supposed to be used, or the Gumko. So post can object because it's bloodless. And if it is bloodless, so then if you follow the Moshe's position, which is the position of many of the post can based on this part of this Ramah and the Shach, so you would have to then do a Tavas Dambris. And Ritendla quoted last year that there was a Moel. Good to have halachic eyes. So whatever he paraded the regular mugain, right? Just to clarify, there are three. There are three materials. Well, actually, there are four ways to do mila. In terms of clamping and not clamping. One is called freestyle. We just pull the skin and cut. Some Hasidic Shemolim still do that. Some Misnagdish also, but that's becoming a dying breed because they'll get sued. The other is called the Mugain guard. It's not a clamp. It's just Rabbi Tendler passed it around, I think. It's just a little guard that catches the skin to protect the atara behind it, then you cut against it. That there's really no objection to. Although I think when they first came out, like 400 years ago or something, so there was always objection. Chadash. But that already sunk in, that's acceptable. It's, it doesn't. It, 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 there's plenty of bleeding with that. And then there's the muggin with a twist that's called a muggin clamp, where you clamp the pieces together. That's the Bronstein, and that also you could do bloodless. And then there's the gumco, which is that whole thing. That whole thing. So the latter two, which could be caused bloodless surgery, so the post can say, majority of posts say should not be used. One issue is Sar HaTinok, and the major issue is because of no bleeding. So Ritzel pointed out that in his shul, the moral was parading the regular Mogain. And then he saw that he slipped out the Mogain clamp, put it on the child, and boom, 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 that's it. And no bleeding. So Rabbi Tendler on the spot says, do HaTafis Nambris. He made them all. It's no big deal, you see. You don't even have to make the child bleed, all you need is a black and blue mark. And the Moyal obviously acted improperly, because why subject the child to unnecessary pain? But La Halacha, that's what he paskind, and I think that's what other poskim say as well, that if you do a bloodless surgery, even in a regular milah, then you have to have a toughest numbers. Does that mean that the kid's an orel if you don't do that? Or it just means you're not being mekayim the mitzvah of a toughest numbers? So I refer you back to that slew of tshuvas of Rav Moshe that I quoted to you earlier, who is mitzadeh, that he's not an orel. But the mitzvah you don't get. So that's why you would have to do a toughest numbers in those cases. Yes?
You mentioned before about the Yotol Chas.
Go ahead. What do you mean?
It says in Reish Tam of Faith,
yeah.
Ma'alo Tov Chas by Yom Yatsan.
Yeah.
And it says in Reish Tam of Faith.
Yeah, absolutely. The Shach raises that Sira, right. I don't know if Yishuv. I think the Aruch HaShulchan might attempt the Yishuv, but I'm not sure if you'd like it. Take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan.
So is that you don't charge Moshe as opposed to who say that clamps are no good? Still the kid is not an
RL. He's mitzadeh that he thinks that that's the truth. But I don't know. He's the only one I saw who dealt with that specific issue. I'm sure the Sefer Bris might have more on that. But I ain't. Okay. So that's the issue of the clamps. And just to summarize, Rabbi Tendler recommended against all of them because of the bloodless surgery, etc. But he did point out that sometimes there's a pressing need from all of them out of town that they can't necessarily make another visit, and they want to not have excessive bleeding, which might require a follow-up visit, which they can't necessarily do. So he recommended making a cut in the Bronstein clamp that would not allow the seal to be as tight as possible, so that there would be a little bit of bleeding. Another option that some Olim use that is they don't close it fully right away, and then they cut, and then they close it up. One final issue I just wanted to, so there is some bleeding, but on the other hand, it's quickly stopped. One final issue I wanted to discuss, Rabbi Tendler briefly alluded to it, Biramisa, but if you look in the Tshuvas of Moshe that you have in the packets, you'll see more about Riches, what it means.
The way the Danko works is with the Atara, this is the Orla that's covering the Atara, and here's the Atara that's closed behind over here, right? So this skin is tightly attached to the Atara. So the way the Gamco works is they want to peel back the skin, put the bell on, put the skin back on, and then clamp it around here, and then they cut around, and they cause no bleeding.
Is that
true? So, well, what they do, see, the net result of Mila is supposed to be it's all gone, it's not coming back.
Right.
With the clamp, they peel back, they put the bell on, and they put it back. So they haven't done Mila yet.
Right.
Right. They just did some peeling. So when they do that peeling, they use the scissors to cut what's called a dorsal slit. The Tendler briefly referred to a dorsal slit, and then they peel back. Now they have no clamp, so that bleeds. So Rav Moshe says, "Aha! It might be from the Inquisition, and we should answer it because of Tsar Hatino. But maybe that should satisfy a toughest on risk." So Rav Moshe says, "I'm not convinced because that's free mila. The mila is the cutting around here, not cutting so that you can put the bell on."
Right, cutting on the top of the tree, right.
But this is just cutting to put the bell on. If you're not cutting anything yet.
Right.
So maybe that shouldn't count as a toughest umbris. So that's he's not sure about. He's mistopic. So Rabbi Tendler briefly alluded to that. That if you include that, so then you'd remove the objection of the bloodless surgery when it comes to the Gamco clamp, but you would still have the inquisitory objection. Okay.
Let's move on to the next topic. A sick child was pointed out in the shiur at length that if it's a minor ailment, so you just wait till the child's healthy. And here Rabbi Tendler noted that halacha differs from the medical opinion here in the sense that what we're looking for is no additional risk factor not cleared for surgery. So if a pediatrician says, yeah, he has this machla, which is localized, but he's okay for mila, that's unacceptable because the Torah only allows the risk of mila, doesn't allow any other risks. So that means you have to wait till he gets better. As soon as he's better, you do it right away. If the child is chola kol gufo, which, just to give some contemporary examples, Ramosha defines as a baby in an incubator or a blue baby, or as Rabbi Tendler pointed out to me, any time the baby goes under what's called the Billy lights, where he has a highly elevated bilirubin level, where the doctors already require medical intervention. So the minute he goes under the Billy lights, so after the doctors say he's better, then you wait a full 7 days, may ace la ace, 24 hours times 7, and then you're clear to do the mila. When? At the buzzer, or can you wait till shkia? We discussed earlier whether you have to do it mamish bismana. But certainly shouldn't be delayed an extra day. Okay. There are some cases that's considered not chola kol gufo, that you could just delay till they're better. So Rabbi Tendler mentioned an eye infection, which is very common. And Ramosha has underweight babies as well. So you didn't have to be incubated. Underweight babies, for whatever reason, we're concerned not to give them mila, but we'll not consider them chola kol gufo. One final issue, I'm sorry. I don't know, because premature might have further complications besides the fact that it's underweight. Maybe underdeveloped lungs, underdeveloped other organs.
No, I mean, in terms of usually they'll end up in an
incubator. So then you're back to Ramosha's basic direction. I think Rabbi Tendler indicated that if your mom can get the doctor to swear that the reason he put the baby in the incubator is because he's at risk, maybe, so maybe you could have the mila bisman. But generally, incubation would already be considered chola kol gufo. Yes.
I just want to say, it was on the eye.
Yeah, that's according to the law. Yeah. I think Rabbi Tendler considered that not to be kovel or enof ke'ev gadol. I wondered about that, but... I don't think he, even though he had a whole shot with the eyes, I think he was talking about a more serious. No. When Rabbi Tendler said an eye infection, he seems to indicate that's cool, considered localized. So, according to Ramah, which is from, I guess, Avodah Zarah, says that it's connected to the. Avodah Zarah, right?
He said the lid is connected to the eye.
Yeah, okay, but I think a minor eye infection, I don't think he was willing to plug into that Ramah. I think someone raised it in Shear, and I don't think it's. I don't know, more than that, I can't say.
It's a bacteria versus viral.
Yeah. So maybe he'll say that Ramah's talking about viral in our lingo. Okay. I was making a lot of trouble in Shir about this, so I don't know if I should re-raise the issue, but I think it's important to point out. In Simon Reish Samach Gimel, just skipping ahead for a moment to go a little bit out of order, since the Mechaber already raised the sick babies here. So the Mechaber discusses the famous case of the yellow baby and the red baby. So the simple reading of the Mechaber is that a yellow baby or red baby, you wait till the color is normal. And then you do the mila, sounds like right away. So in other words, it sounds like we're treating a yellow baby and a red baby as like not right. We're not treating them as sick. We're treating them as just not quite ready yet, like Ramosha's underweight baby. It is true that the Sefer Bris does record some achronim who say that a yellow baby, once they become unyellow, you have to wait a full 7 days afterward. But I think the consensus is that you do it right away. So Rabbi Tendler, with a very important analysis, which is also, the Sefer Bris has a lot about that too, in general, about medical knowledge and halacha, when do you change, when don't you change. So Rabbi Tendler went to the approach that, at least in this regard, and that's the consensus of the majority, at least of the literature poskim, not necessarily the Chassidish poskim, the literature poskim, that the Gemara was dealing with the knowledge that they had, that all they had was the color, and they had nothing else. But when you have underlying medical diagnostic tests for the what's causing the color, and you see that things are okay, then the color doesn't have to bother you. So what I was trying to hack and share is that, so then it turns out that this halacha in Shulchan Aruch has no practical application at all. Because according to the Shulchan Aruch, a yellow baby, you'd wait till he gets on yellow and do it right away. But nowadays, mamanafshach, if the bilirubin is good, so you do it right away. And if the bilirubin is bad, and he asks you, you need treatment, so then you got to wait 7 days. Okay, so this Shulchan Aruch becomes just theoretical and not practical. And I think every time there was maskim, I just... Okay. Okay. Yes?
Just from experience, I can tell you that Kat's leg is not pulled that way.
What does he do?
He, even for a child who was under the lights, he would do with his mom if the vision is okay.
Oh. I mean, if it was a precautionary light. Or the light brought it down to... Ah, so then you'd have a modern application. Baruch Hashem, so Baruch Shekivanti. Because I went to Rabbi Tendler next year, and I said, tell me, if you put him under the Billy lights, and then everything's okay, can you do it bismana? So he says, no. Under the Billy lights, 7 days. And he indicated, he crafts a little bit, that the younger doctors are very cautious. And, so once they make a medical decision, he thought that was very chalka gufa. But yeshkoyach. So I was trying to save the Shulchan Aruch Lamaisa with that same trick. So you're telling me that at least some mol and munchim, I know Rabbi Tendler thinks very highly of Rabbi Katzenstein, hold that way. Okay, maybe we'll slug it out again in different. Okay. Let's. There is a whole discussion about the meso ech of machmas mila, and it fits very nicely if you read the many positions that it seems to be a genetic disease following the mother, which fits to hemophilia. But there are other shittas that are machmir even from the father's side, and lamaisu are machmir and everything. So meso echav machmas mila, the first two, so you don't do a mila on the third baby. And the Rambam writes, but you wait till he gets older, and you do it. So here, Rabbi Tendler, the first time I heard this, I was about to like jump out the window. I couldn't believe this. Rabbi Tendler said that the Rambam writes that if you have a sickness, so you wait later, because you can always wait for the mila later, and you can never return a Jewish neshama if you mess up. So it sounds like, because you can always do it later, but if you can't do it later, so you got to assume additional risk factors. And Rabbi Tendler said that halacha lemaisa, but not in such a shocking way. He said that if you have a hemophiliac baby and you could inject him with the right factor, so you're not going to have a sakana. Okay. But the reason he was willing to kind of violate his original rules that you should never assume additional risk is because here you have no brera. But the risk he was willing to assume, mind you, was very little. Because we're talking about they would probably do the same thing for any other necessary surgery. Okay.
I didn't get that interpretation. I thought he was saying it's only because now we could inject him with this thing that you could give him the mila. But if you can't inject him with that, then he cannot.
Yeah, because if it's vada'i pikuach nefesh, so even the Rambam would agree that you don't do it. But what he derived from the Rambam is that you have to assume additional risk factors if you can never do it. And that's why the Rambam, that's what the Chassan Sofer, that's what I said. When I first heard it from Tendler, I thought it was Mamish his own Chiddush. Okay. Adam Gobel, his own Chiddushim also. But I saw that that ultimately the Chassan Sofer says the same idea. And he puts together the two Rambams. The Rambam who says that you could do the mila later, and the Rambam who says that for the quote-unquote hemophiliac baby, I say quote-unquote because it's not so clear what kind of baby the Gemara is talking about, you wait till the baby gets older, and then you do it then. So the Pesachei Tshuva says, if you ask me, the Noda Behuda, he quotes the Noda Behuda, if you ask me, I would say never do it. But that's what the Rambam says. So why did the Rambam say that? But he did. So the Chassam says, I'll tell you why he said it. Because the Rambam holds you, oh, you have to do mila. So when he gets older, the risk factor is less. Now, it doesn't work out in medical science. He gets older, he's hemophiliac. He's still a hemophiliac. But the Rambam was maybe talking about a different type of individual. I'm sorry?
He was saying hemophilia could be a case of...
Okay, okay. So the bottom line is, I just wanted to be mevaseis, that the psaker of Tendler, working with that Rambam, that when you can never do the mila later, so you have to assume additional risk factors. If it's a rove that the child's going to die, then for sure you wouldn't do mila. Even the Rambam wouldn't advocate that. But the basis of assuming additional risk is based on that Rambam. That's why you have that rather interesting Pesachei Tshuva, according to Noda Behuda, about that baby whose two brothers died in mila. So wait till he gets older and do it on a sunny day, and different pseudo-medical ideas to try to make sure that nothing goes wrong. But the application to the factor 7 or factor 9, whatever it was, so that I think that's more directly understandable in terms of that Rambam. Yes?
I was going to say that actually the Gemara of Rav Nosson of Bavli, the whole case is based on the Gemara, is actually where the baby was yellow, and the two died because
right.
of the yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the Shulchan Aruch breaks this up because it seems like the yellow and the red
yeah, well, yeah, so
combined
the,
with that.
that.
In the Pitchei Tshuva, they point out that you got to be careful how you apply this. That the only time you'd apply the later sifim of the Shulchan Aruch is if you were not mal a yellow or a red baby.
Right.
Because if you were mal a yellow or red baby, so I have a clear why the children died. So then you're not going to have an excuse for the third child. It means that there were no complications at all in the first and the second. Nonetheless, they died. So now the third is off the hook, at least temporarily, till he gets older.
Probably said that they lived.
The third one, right?
Yeah, third one, yeah.
And so they all asked, "No, Masan Abavli, how did he do the third kid?" But Meisulech Machzmila,
because
he had a reason why they died. So then you do the third.
So this is separate from that. This is without right. a reason.
Maybe they would have halacha lemaisa applications now. If you have a medical diagnosis with 100% certainty, why the first two died and the third one is not relevant to that? The first two had a genetic disease or whatever, which the third one didn't have.
Right.
So maybe you wouldn't have that objection.
Right.
Thing of, the Pitzchei Tshuva and Sifkat and. Dalit, I think, basically puts mentions that idea. Okay. It's a little bit out of order, but I'm trying to follow the order of the Shulchan Aruch, just bringing in the other germane Shulchan Aruchs as well. We'll discuss that issue, I guess, when we come to Shabbos, the issue of androgynous and a C-section. Okay. Zmanei Hamila, in terms of how do you count? Right, so of course it's 8 days including the endpoints, and you have to go by Vadayom. So if the child is born after Tzeis Kechavim until Shkia of the next day, so that was born on that day, and then that's day one. If the child was born in Bein Hashmashos, so then you have to be Machmir to push the Mila off by 1 day, because a Mila Tochazman, you might even need a Tavastan Brish, Pashtas Yonat Yotzin a Mitzvah. Mila Acharzman, you just Mevatel the Mila Bismano, so you always push it off rather than push it back. So that comes up in terms of regular Bein Hashmashos, so let's say between Sunday and Monday, you push it off till Monday rather than Sunday. And it comes up in terms of Shabbos. If it's Shabbos Sunday, do it Sunday. If it's Friday Shabbos, then you got to push it off till Sunday, because you can't do it on Shabbos either, because it's a Suffolk Bismano, you can only be Docha Shabbos of Arizman. So I just wanted to briefly point out, although Kayadua, Willig Shlita has an article in the Yevul HaYovlos, is it? About Zmanei Hayom, and Minchas Kohen discusses Zmanei Hayom, the Sefer on Yerodea, and the Sefer Abrit discusses it at length. A massive topic, the Shittas Hagra, and Shittas Habein Atam, and what Shkia, and what Seis Kachavim, so all of this is very relevant. I just wanted to mention Halacha Lemaisa, what emerges from a very important tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's Atzal, together with some Piskei Tshuvas. Piskei Tshuvas meaning that brown Sefer that goes parallel with the Mishnah Berurah. For Mila, this is also relevant to Shabbos, as we mentioned earlier. So Reb Moshe writes as follows, that if you a woman does a Hefsek Tara during Bein Hashmashos, leaving aside the particular Shita of Reb Moshe about Bein Hashmashos within 9 minutes, I don't want to get involved in that now, it's going to take a far afield. I once did it, but it took too much time. So if you look in the Tshuva Chelek Dalet, it's a Tshuva to Rav Tendler, actually, about Zmanei Hayom, and he develops this whole idea about the 9 minutes, the Bein Hashmashos, his version of the Bein Hashmashos for the girl. So he writes that if a woman does a Hefsek Tara during Bein Hashmashos, it could be Mekel, to treat that as a Hefsek Tara done during the day, because of a Sfek Sveika. What's the Sfek Sveika? Safik Yom, Safik Laila. And Safik Gra, Safik Rabbein Atam. In other words, 9 minutes. 9 minutes after Shkia. How he gets the 9 minutes when the Gra is 13 is a whole Cheshbon based on his 50. You look in the Shul. In other words, Bein Hashmashos itself might be day, and even if the Bein Hashmashos is night, but this might not be Bein Hashmashos, because according to Rabbein Atam, Bein Hashmashos starts much later. According to the Gra, Bein Hashmashos starts right after sunset, and according to Rabbein Atam, Bein Hashmashos starts 3 1/4 mil, 58 and a half, you said, after Shkia, and 58 and a half to be adjusted astronomically. So he has a Sfek Sveika. So just to be aware in terms of Hilchos Nida, that's a very questionable psak of Rav Moshe in terms of its Kabbalah across the spectrum, because many argued on that Sfek Sveika.
Doesn't seem like it is a Sfek Sveika, because one Sfek, it's not like two wins or
something. Shem Echad is one objection. The Be'er Halacha raises that here as well. Right, and others raise an issue that it might be a Sfek Sveika retired to the Sasseri. You can't. In the Be'er Halacha and Shin Lamed Aleph, you mean? Very good. So I just saw that today. So, okay, so it's a questionable psak of Rav Moshe. Many rely on it, many don't. So the reason I mentioned that we're not learning Hilchos Nida is because of the following. Rabbi Eider asked Rav Moshe in the second volume of Hilchos Nida, he said, wait, your Svek Sveka is presuming that you treat Rabbeinu Tam as on the halachic radar screen. But let's say you're not machmir for Rabbeinu Tam even when it comes to Shabbos. So that means pretty much that for your all intents and purposes, Rabbeinu Tam is a shita that you're not considering to be in doubt. Because if you did consider it to be in doubt, you certainly would be machmir for Nisakaris. So can those in Eretz Yisrael, for example, who are, even in America, who are not machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, follow your kula? So he says two lines. Of course not. And who gave them reshus not to be machmir for Rabbeinu Tam? And he says it even about Eretz Yisrael. And he has a whole pilpul about the Talmidei Hagra, and even though the Gra held that way, but who gives the rights for the Talmidim of the Talmidim who didn't figure out the Lumdus on their own to follow the Grand Rebbe? They have an interesting analysis in its own in terms of following Pesachim of great, great, great Rebbeim, you know, in the chain. But, I'm sorry, so Rav Moshe said that if you don't follow Rabbeinu Tam for Shabbos... Ah, one second, but many shuls follow 42, he holds 50. Right? Okay. Whatever. You could be mafalpul. Maybe you could resurrect the kula. But that's important to know in terms of Hilchos Nida. But what's relevant to us is in halacha lemaisa. How, as a rav, does one navigate in these issues of bein hashmashes? Do you have to just be super machmir both ways? That from shkia until 72 minutes, or if you follow Rabbi Willig, right, that 72 translated into American scene is more like 100, 140, whatever, depending on the season. So from Shkia till then, that's called Bein HaShemashis. And any child born then, you're going to have to treat as a Bein HaShemashis baby and always push it off. Or sometimes push it off for 2 days, sometimes three, sometimes four, as we'll see. Or maybe you could say, listen, I'm a Gronik, so I followed a Gro. So the Piskei Tshuvas, as well as Rav Moshe himself, indicating, even though he didn't like it, but in that context, is listen, it depends who's on your screen. If you're always Gro, Bein for Shabbos, Bein for other issues, so that's what you follow for Mila. Whatever is man that you follow for the grow, maker adin for dinam daraisa, so that you'll follow for mila too, which could be as early as a half an hour maybe for mila. So there are different practical shittas, and it also depends on the mo'el, right? You get a mo'el and you say, well, my rav says that we're doing the mila on Shabbos. So how soon after shkia was the baby born on Friday night? 30 minutes. But it's good enough because my rav said that that's called Shabbos. Just listen. Get another mile. You know, there's a certain practicality here. You have to obviously get a mile who's coordinating with the posek. So Rabbi Katzenstein had his positions, another mile had their positions. But basically, if you're basically only following Shittas Agro, not Rabbeinu Tam, then you have a right even to do the Mila on Shabbos based on that calculation. But if you're machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, me'ikar adin, no, there's a suffix, not just as a chumra ba'alma. That when you're really stuck, you'd be willing to violate the Rabbeinu Tam Shita. But your mom is treated as a Sveka Daraisa, and you would never violate it. So that means that for Mila, it's also on your map, and then you have to, as I said before, whatever you're machmir for, from Shkia till the end of Rabbeinu Tam, will be considered Rabbeinu Shemashis for purposes of calculating Mila. Okay, so that's a rule of thumb. If you want to see the Makoros inside that spelled this out, Rabbi Willig granted me this... analysis, although he wasn't so happy because, listen, I'm Machmir 72, so Rabbeinu Tam's on my halachic radar screen. So, whatever, this is not what he said. He said, you are Ma'aretz, 72, this is not what he told me, but 72, Rabbeinu Tam is 100th or whatever, it's worse than the astronomy. So you're not Machmir Rabbeinu Tam. He said, yeah, but there were many Gedolei Poskim who held that lo nitna Torah l'astronomim, and you could just follow 72. So isn't that at least a shita? He says, okay, if that's what you follow, then that's your Rabbeinu Tam. So for Mila, that's what you would have to be machmir for.
What's the long Rabbeinu Tam?
The long Rabbeinu Tam is where you take 4 mil and you translate it based on the degrees below the horizon of the sun.
Above.
Okay, this is already off. It's out of my league. Basically, you try to project what 4 mil would have been in Eretz Yisrael in a certain season, you try to project it to
right.
the seasons
to the
everywhere else.
It has to be during the equinox.
I see.
How much time does that work out?
It could be over 100 minutes and even significantly
because
more.
Day and night are equal at that point, and that's the point that there's not.
Okay. More than that, I can't say. It looks, if you ask Guy Perlstein, he has it clear. So I never had to say. Yeah. Just 1 second. I just wanted to give the mocker for that. Those who want to do my eye into this topic. The Pitzkei Tshuva has a very nice summary about this. You have a parallel in Hilchos Milah on Shabbos, at least in Siman Shin Lamed Aleph. So you have that as follows. 1 second. Reish Samach Vav. Reish Samach Vav. Okay. Shin Lamed Aleph in the Pitzkei Tshuva Os Hey. Okay, Shin Lamed Aleph Osei, where he discusses that idea of do you have to be machmer for Veinatam or not? And the basic answer is it depends. If you are, generally, then you have to be machmer for Mila too. If you're not, then you do not have to be machmer for Mila too, even if it involves doing it on Shabbos. Yes, that's very Alech Lamaisa. Babies, Baruch Hashem, born all times of the day. So baby's born, let's make it simple, okay? The baby's born 45 minutes after sunset on Friday. Okay, so for those who are in the orbit of the Groh, that's comfortably Seisa Kolchof. So can you be mal that baby on Shabbos or Sunday? So if you're machmer ben atam, you can't do it on Shabbos. If you're not, you can do it on Shabbos. All right. Whatever. Libi omerli, you know, whatever. You're risking mila tochasman, so you know. Okay. But that's still. Fly so chav mitzvahs. Sometimes you take risks. Do it does not. Yes.
So that's one of the things with Chavim himself. You know, a lot of people say that they contradict themselves for Reish Samach Aleph, the whole thing of Reish Samach Aleph. Here, he says in that one shot that, you know, if you look at the babies coming out of the birth channel and you go and you take a look and you see that
stars,
you know, stars. Mas here at the Yom, which is like the Rishami that says that's like the Grah sheet that he says they should have them. And he contradicts himself there.
Yeah, I guess I didn't get a chance, but there's a very long Grah, which I'm sure you'll enjoy because so he probably works it out. It could be there are spheres. Ah, okay, good. Body lines. Okay, there are extra details in the Shulchan Aruch about Seis Kechavim, but basically what it boils down to is when in the Torah Malach HaSharis, and you have to make your best shot at it. So Baruch Hashem, we have time clocks and we have Luchei Zmanim, so we don't have to really rely on these estimations. But basically what you have is that the baby was born now. And then you wait 20 minutes, and then you go outside, and it seems to you that by how dark the sky is, that probably 20 minutes ago was already 3 stars. So that's good enough. But in the Tel Malchai Sharet, you could estimate. And same thing the other way. If the baby was born now, and then you go outside, what's the other case that
it's in the birth channel.
Yeah, it's born now, and you right away go outside, and you see 3 stars.
Right.
So you could assume that there were 3 stars already.
Yeah.
So you could use estimations, but nowadays you don't have to rely on that. You record the hospital time of birth, and then you look up Luchei Zmanim, and you see what the deal is. You got to be a little careful because, as we'll see later, the definition of birth is the Yetzias HaRosh, so the hospital might define it as the Yetzias HaGuf. I don't know, you have any data on this?
Yeah.
So a minute or two, you know, usually the difference between Yetzias HaRosh and Yetzias HaGuf is not too much, but if there's a minute or two off, so you gotta be a little careful. If you have a suffix, you probably have to be machmir.
Especially if it doesn't go back in, like another one we asked there about the Prus door, and then it goes back in, right? Isn't that what the mashmos, the Reish Samach Aleph is? Because it says if it's in the vitna, she's not in labor pains, then you can say you don't count from there, right? Is that the mashmos?
Yeah, there's some funny cases there about the baby crying in the womb. And
yeah.
I'm leaving all of those questions. I don't understand this. Okay. There is a machlokis there, Rabbi Shachter mentioned on tapes, the knockout tape in the tape library, very beautiful summary of everything that I'm saying is long, drawn out, but I speak fetch the fashion. Rabbi Shachter jams in like 10 minutes, so, but I don't know, tell him. But the Iker Adin is that even though for Nida, a woman becomes a Nida when the Dam leaves the uterus and enters the prozdor, even though the Dam didn't leave the body yet. So one might be tempted to say that birth is also defined like that. But that means that halachic birth might take place before medical birth, so that by a few minutes or sometimes maybe even a few hours, if it's just a complicated labor.
So the Ikar HaDin is that when it comes to birth, it's Yetzia La'avir HaOlam. But if you look at the Pitzkei Chuvis, he quotes discussions about this. So there are some who are machmir. There are some who are machmir that if a baby is born medically at the border of say it's a kochavim, that they won't allow the bris on Shabbos because they're worried that it was halakhically born maybe on Friday. But the Ikar HaDin is not that way. The Ikar HaDin is that birth, the medical definition of birth, in terms of the head coming out, outside the world, outside to the world, and was called Avra Olam, and not into the prose door, that's the position that's accepted, and that's the one that's recorded in the Pesachei Tshuva. Okay, let's now move on Simon Reish Samach Gimel, we covered most of it already in passing because we discussed the medical issues. Let's move to the issue of Atafas Dam Bris, which is Reish Samach Gimel, Seif Dalit. Atafas Dam Bris, and here again, for those who want to look into it well, the Sefer Bris has an unbelievable analysis on this. It was summarized in about three lines on this tape that Rabbi Shefter gave over. Atafas Dam Bris. So the Gemara has a machlekes whether you do it or not. And we paskin you do. Why? Shema Safek Orla Krusha. What does that mean? Literally, a pressed Orla. They have a baby, right? That pardon the graphic picture. Like they have a baby that it looks regular. That doesn't look like there's any skin covering it. So what do you mean, Safek Arla Kusha? So the simpler reading of the Gemara, although not what is accepted by halacha, is that we're worried that there is a thin layer of skin that is so pressed on top of the atara, but is not part of the skin of the atara, it's really separate from it. So that's a suffix or lakusha. Baby was born without a separate skin, but normally babies have a skin, so maybe there is an or lakusha there. So that fits in with the lesson of the Shach, where he writes that if it looks pretty good that there's an or lakusha, you'll make a bracha, but you won't be machal Shabbos. And if it's not mishtalful, so then no bracha and no chil Shabbos for the Hatavas Dambris. And what's the Hatavas Dambris supposed to accomplish? What's it supposed to do? So there is, I think, an Or Zeruah quoted by the Sefer Bris, the Sefer also quoted on the page. Hatavas Dambris is basically a scrape off a layer of skin of the Atara, the whole Atara, because you're worried that maybe the skin there. So the Or Zeruah says, "Aish, you're gonna make the kid into a Kruz Shavcha." So the Gemara said, right, that's what happened to one of the Amoraim. That he was machmir to do Atavas Dam Bris, and they did it himself, or whatever, he botched the job, and he made it into a Kruz Shavcha. That's not the consensus that I post in, happily, for those who are not a little mole. But we assume Atavas Dam Bris is literally Atavas Dam Bris. Now, what's the svara there? Because Mila, you can't do. Arla, Priya, you can't do. So you do the remaining Chelek. Namely, Hatavas Dambris. That would be the other shot. We're not worried about actual skin being there. So notwithstanding that shock, I don't know how to navigate. Body or lakusha, so what exactly are you doing? You're peeling it off. I don't know how to navigate everything together. But Allah is what Molin do. They do Hatava, they make the or somewhere bleed. Where? So some folks can say you're supposed to do it over here, which is where the kid would normally bleed. Because the way you do a mila, right, if you pull down the skin, right, so it looks like that, and then you chop, right, you cut it, and then it snaps back to go over there. So where does it bleed? Right there. So some folks can say you're supposed to, on the gid itself, a little behind the atara, where the skin would normally bleed. And the chazmish says it's dead wrong, that's chavala, and you're not going to say anything. You have to do it on the atara. The way Rabbi Shefter said it on tape, he says, and even though it doesn't make sense, but Sechel HaTorah is not operate based on always what makes sense. That's the way it is. So Rabbi Zimmerman said that what Molin, who are Medaktik, do is they make a little scratch over here. So they do a little bit on the Atara and a little bit on the Jew. That's what he mentioned to us when he spoke, addressed us when Rabbi Brown Spiegel invited him. So they Yotze Bo Shitas. And the Chazon Ish writes, you don't even have to make it bleed, you don't have to make black and blue. So a little Srita, I think there's a little tool they use, like sometimes they, you know, there's something they use to draw blood sometimes, a little sample, something like that that makes a little prick, and that's it, and very little bleeding, maybe even not at all, just a little scratch that
makes a drop of even internal bleeding, and that's the whole thing. Nafkamina for children who had a medical circumcision and now want to become religious, or Gershon Skarashimol, and of course babies is more, it's very rare, but that are kids who are totally mohel. You have a lot of cases of miktsas mohel, where a little bit of the aura is not there when the child's born. I actually witnessed such a bris, Chassidus Shemoyel, he says, shtikle noilid mohel. So he says, but the Rabbani Shlomo can give him an etzah. You know, how exactly how to do it, because it's a complicated procedure when it's partially. But to be totally mohel, like Moshe Rabbeinu, that's very rare from what I understand. But if that's the case, so you just do Hatavas Tambris. If you have a little bit of skin, so you don't do Hatavas Tambris, you just do regular Milan, whatever you have. More complicated. You need more of a mumche to do it because you have less skin to grab on. No bracha on Hatavas Tambris unless, as the Shach writes here in our Simon, it's nire kivadai or lakvusha. What those words mean, I cannot tell you. But that's what he says. And it would be the regular bracha. It would be the bracha alamila, lachniso, etc. Rabbi Shechter mentioned an interesting Avni Nezer. It sounds like a Torah Madavshat, but Rabbi Soloveitchik said the same thing, that if you don't go with Yor Zeruah, so what does Orla Kavusha mean? So they say Orla Kavusha means... What?
The other Pshat said it was like all around the skin.
Or Zeruah. I think it's the Or Zeruah. I think so. So the Avni Nezer and the Rav said that if you don't like that Or Zeruah, so what's that Tavas Tamris meant to accomplish? What do you mean Sufik Orla Kavusha? What's the Orla Kavusha? It's not pressed on, so what is it? So Orla Kavusha does not mean pressed on, it means suppressed. To give a medical analogy, it means that in the genes it was really supposed to be there, but it didn't quite make it. So in other words, Al Pi Halacha, the child really should have been an oral. So we got to do what we can. If we would be guaranteed that genetically, it would have, I don't know if I'm using the right terminology, there shouldn't have been skin there, so the kids are mohel and don't bother doing anything. But since we have a suffix, then maybe it's a suppressed orla, that it should have grown, but it really didn't, but some fluke occurred that it didn't, so that's so we have a substitute, and that's the toughest numbers. Okay, you don't like the pshat, so you'll be mine and the Avni Nezer, but that's the best we have without the Or Zeruah so far. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch writes that if you do a toughest numbers, you got to know what you're doing, and you have to make sure that, he points out, that not every child that looks mohel is mohel. So you have to have a bikias. You know. Like the Or Zeruah pointed out, sometimes you will have such a situation where you'll have skin that's on top of it. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, you have to have a mohel who knows what he's doing to feel around to make sure there's no skin on top, because if there is skin on top, it has to be cut, right? And if there isn't, so then you just do a tavas tamris. Okay. There is a minig that's quoted by the Mechaber, which is halacha lemaisa, although there were some Rishonim who already felt it was improper. But la halacha, we do it. And that is to do a mila, unfortunately, of a child who died, either in the womb or out of the womb, or because of some delay, but without a mila. And it's Tzimim Chazek, Emunah, and Tchias HaMesim, and they give the child a name. One of the ideas is that the father should be able to call him by name, Lassid Lavo, that the child should have an entity, an identity. And this is practiced at the very gory. There was a sefer on Bris Mila put up by Art Scroll that discussed this, you know, some of the, but it is done. Some folks can even say you would dig up a grave to do that. A little bit of a stretch. Interesting medrash that they quote here, that the medrash says, I think in Erevin, that Avraham Avinu stands at the Pesach of Gehinnom, and anybody has a mila, he takes them out eventually. And I used to think it meant they never go for a sigh of relief. But where Rav Shechter said it over, means no, he takes them out eventually. People get to him, even if they have means to take them out. But people who don't have a bris mila, or they ruined it by being the boil hanachri, etc., hanachris, so they don't look mohel, and Avraham doesn't recognize them, he doesn't save them. So one of the early Rishonim says, it's unbelievable, says that the Ribbono Shel'Olam takes the arlus of the babies who had a mila after they died, and so to speak, he puts it on these relim, whatever that means, talk about a neshama, and then they don't go out of Gehinnom because of that. That's what the Sefer Bris quotes is. Okay. Let's continue. The Sefer Bris records the same thing is true for a female, that although obviously you don't do a mila, but you would give a name for a female fetus that didn't make it. Okay.
Yeah,
But I don't understand, where, was, is there any other case where halacha goes by genotype to say that it's suppressed, that there's something in the genes that does something?
I modernized the tshuva of the Avnei Nezer to put it into contemporary jargon. Obviously, he did not use that kind of discussion.
There has to be something there that's manifested physically.
Yes, he probably used some kind of terminology like it. You have been sometimes in halacha that idea, know that it should have been, but didn't make it. I have to think about this, other parallels to that. Okay, there is a discussion about giving a non-Jew mila. I'm going to delay that, Beis Hashem, to our discussion of Geirus. Okay, so even though it's here, but it's also mentioned in Geirus, so we'll mention it there. Okay, who is kosher to do a bris mila? So, a Yisrael gadol is the best candidate. A Yisrael male gadol. But if you don't have anybody else, certainly a katan is also kosher. An arel is also kosher, provided that he's an arel halachically, namely meisu ech of machmas mila, not because of because he's a mummer. And concerning a woman, so it goes as follows: the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that although it's a machlokus about this, but we paskin that a non-Jew may not do mila. The question is why. Either based on the pasuk of as brisi tishmar, and the guy is not bechlal bris, or because as hamol yimol, one who has a mila. And the Gemara concludes after a whole shakavitaria that a guy al pi alacha is an oral even if he has a mila, and a Yisrael al pi alacha is a mohol even if he has an orla, at least if it's not for rebellious purposes that he has an orla. So the nafkamina is a woman. Because a woman is considered mohul, because there's no possibility of doing mila, but she's not bechlal bris. She's not bechlal de mitzvah. So, lahalacha, as a machlaik tishayim had a paskin on this. Rov Vishon, the Ramam, the Rosh, the Riff, I think, all paskin lekula, that a woman is kosher for mila, which is the shittas hamachaber. And the Ramah is kosher for the shittas hatosis, that we paskin like the other day, at the day of Esprisi Tishmar, the women are psulim. So the Ramah writes that you should be mahader after a man. The Aruch HaShulchan elaborates that you would even be willing to wait to get a man from another town. I don't know whether the Ramo would be machmir to delay the bris from day 8 to day 9 to get a man. Someone just asked me the shaila, well, not just last year. I'm not a posek, but they asked me just to talk about it. But a female Jewish pediatrician who had an option of giving mila to her clients, who are not religious, who probably would not get a mila otherwise. So if they're not going to get a mila otherwise, obviously that's a no-brainer that you have the woman do it. You rely on the Mechaber and maybe even the Ramah, because maybe the Ramah is only throwing in a Hidur. But it's possible to say that all things being equal, if you can't get a man, maybe even to delay according to the Ramah, but not according to the Mechaber. Okay, a non-Jew, the Mechaber writes... The Ramah sounds like he's Choshesh Vetosis, but how much is he Choshesh? So he writes... Noagin lahader achar ish. What does that mean? That means will we delay a bris lahader achar ish? Will we delay it for an hour or two lahader achar ish? So that's unclear in the Ramah. The Mechaya kosher. Licharchila, even the Mechaber agrees he's supposed to use the Yisrael above bar mitzvah. If someone could find out to me the svara for that, I'd appreciate it. I just haven't been able to find a specific mocker for that. The Rif quotes it, but I don't know what the mocker for the Rif is. A guy who does mila is puzzle. As the Gemara concludes, and the Mechaber writes, you don't got to do mila again. The Ramah writes, oh yes you do, but you got to do a tavas dam bris. So the Beis Yosef apparently writes that even the Rambam, who says you don't have to do mila again, he means you don't have to do mila again. But a tavas dam bris, maybe he agrees you have to do.
Who reads the
Beis Yosef, and that's recorded by the Shach. The simple reading of the Mechaber and the Rambam is that you don't need anything. But the Beis Yosef interprets the Rambam to mean that you need a tavas dam bris. Very questionable, because that means that the Rambam is saying that if a guy does the mila, you don't have to do mila again. What are you supposed to do? So maybe it means like the Or Zeruah, and maybe you don't have to slice another layer of skin off. So the pasuk is around. You do nothing. Whatever the pshat in the Mechaber is, there are more pasuks you do a tavas dam bris. So at least for Ashkenazim, the question is academic. Sfaradim is a separate issue. You have to do a tavas dam bris. Right. So here again, this touches upon the issue we discussed earlier. When do you need a tavas dam bris? Should we say, listen, he's not an oral. Why do you want to do a tavas dam bris for? You already removed the or ha mila and the or ha priya. On the other hand, maybe a tavas dam bris could you be yotzei to mitzvah a tavas dam bris that you did bipsul. So the Mechaber seems to say, at least the simple reading of the Rambam is you don't do anything because nothing to do. And the Ramah says you do it. Shagas Aryeh, true to his shita, says No, a thousand times is. Are you to the mitzvah? No, but you blew it. There's nothing to do. So this is Halacha Lamaisa, because with the best of intentions, there was a publication in Brooklyn from Kol Bnei Torah, where they had a kind of Halacha corner. And the Shaila was a very frum couple. Brooklyn. So the doctor didn't ask. Took the baby. Gave it circumcision. Routine circumcision. That's nahug in America, even for most non-Jewish babies. And they presented the child package deal. Surprise, surprise. So what do you do? So Allah HaMashiach, you do a toughest time bris, but what a disaster. The father, not by his fault, but was not, minimally, was not able to fulfill the mitzvah of Mila. But whether it happens b'mezid, b'shogig, or by accident, irreligious Jews, sometimes even religious Jews, so that's the halacha for Ashkenazim, you would do a toughest time bris.
You be Yom Ches?
Be Yom Ches, but not on Shabbos. Right. It would not be Docha Shabbos. That's the Shach assumes that even a Vada Chiev of a Tavis Namris is not Docha Shabbos. All the more so a Safek Chiev.
Anyway, did you make all the Brahmas, including Korei Shabbos?
That's an interesting question, because the Shach paskins that in these kinds of cases, the Vada you need a Tavis Namris. So maybe, no, because there's a Shach in the Reish Samach, Aleph, who says that maybe you don't do, you're not Machal Shabbos for a Tavis Namris. No? In terms of brachas, I don't know. I have to be ma'ayin, because the shach, because it seems to be that by a nolid mohol we don't make the brachas, because it's a suffix in the Gemara, suffix or lakfusha. Here, the shach says, sounds like vadai, that let's say nolad nimol toches, or nimol balayla, maybe nimol nachri too, maybe old vadai you need, I'm not sure. So would you make brachas? But not alamila?
For care.
Oh, okay. But not alamila. When it's Hatafa. Okay. I don't know. Your question's a good one. I have to be mine further on that. Okay. Who else is possible for Mila? So the Ramah adds the following two personages. The person who is an Orel because of Mumorus, meaning he's rebelling. He's a Mumor Larelus. He's not doing Mila on principle. So we tend to quote it, the joy of being uncircumcised. I quoted one of the articles in lambasting Mila, which is one of the reasons Rabbi Tanz is such an advocate, and that's the boys caught it, of making Mila more pleasant in terms of anesthesia, because he doesn't want any unnecessary fodder for the anti-religious medical community to convince our not as of yet Shomri Torah Mitzvah's brethren to not do Mila. So if you can make it more pleasant for the baby, so it's one step better. So there were,
is that because he's a mover of Oso Dabar?
I don't think so. Because that would be an issue, I think, of Nemonos. Here the Ramah is concerned, and this is actually against Toisus, but the Ramah is concerned, it's Shita, I think, of the Ether, if I'm not mistaken, that Mumer La Relus, he's basically Mafkia the Bris from himself. So he's not Bechlal Bris, and he's also not a Mohol. He might even be both. Because normally we say Kol Yisrael Mehulenheim, but he's Mafkia everything. So it could be for the Ramah you have two strikes against him. And it could also be the Ramah Lashitosa. The Ramah was Koshish that a woman can't be a Moel because the issue is Bris, so he was Mafkia to Bris. To say that a Mumer LaReilus is Kosher is to assume that, listen, you could try all you want and you could run away from the Ribbono Shel Olam, but you're still Bechlal Bris. That's the other side. The Kivayegu here points out that this Ramah is not Muskim Lakol, but that is Ramah Shita, at least Lachumra. And then he throws in a Mumer Lachol Atarakula, Shadino Ka'akum, at least in certain areas. And for here too, even leaving aside the issue of whether he's Dino Ka'akum Lachol Atarakula in all areas, but he's also not Bechlal Bris and maybe not Kamal either. Even if he has a Mila, but he's a Mumer Lachol Atarakula. So the Rabbi Kiva Eger here just notes that this Ramah is not Muskim at all, and according to Tosfos, at least in Avodah Zarah, it could be. Tosfos doesn't really address the issue of a Mumel Chol Tarkula, but it could be that according to the Tosfos, one could make a case that a Mumel Chol Tarkula is kosher. So Rabbi Kiva Eger leaves as a tzarech in what to do if such a person did the bris, whether we would be matzrich hatafas tam bris. The Ramah would be matzrich. Right, an irreligious, whatever the definition of Mumel Chol Tarakula is, that whole lively topic. B'shogeg, b'mezid, b'oneis, nebuchanapikaris, whatever the issue is. But the Ramah seems to indicate, whatever you define as a Mumel Chol Tarakula, you have to do a Tavis Tam Bris, and Rebbe Kiva Eger is not so prepared to do that. Reb Moshe Feinstein cites the Ramah on this, and he writes that a mom lechal Torah kula, you have to do a Tavis Tambris, and even if a mom lechal Shabbos for Hesia, you also have to do a Tavis Tambris, because it's also Dino Kakum. And the Rav, as recorded, I think, in the Nefesh Rav, sorry? I don't know. That's what I deliberately delayed that. I deliberately pushed that aside, because that's a global topic. Phoenix and Ishba, what's the status? What areas is he? Kihudi? So, whatever the status is, I think it'll be the same thing.
Rabbi would qualify,
don't know. I don't know. A reform rabbi started out as Orthodox and rebelled, so maybe that's now we're in the home clear. But anybody else I think would be questionable. The Rav said that as follows, that if you have nobody else to do the Mila, and this couple will not have the child have a Mila later, so use the Mumer Lechal Tarkula. So the Rav Shech said the Rav has been quoted. He said the Rav, they quoted the Rav as saying, yeah, he held that as long as the person's Jewish, he could do it. No, he held that, fine, he held like a Bekiveger, that B'shas Et Chak Godel, if that's the only person available, and the couple will not allow the child to have a bris mila later because they will not be willing to allow an older child to undergo the pain of circumcision, so do it al yidei a Jewish doctor. The question was, there was a chaplain who was stationed in the Philippines, I think, and the only mall around was a pediatrician who was an irreligious Jew, and the Rav told him, so wait till the kid is five when you're off of duty, and you'll do it when you get back to America, because it was a from chaplain. But if it would be an irreligious couple, then he would allow, apparently he would allow it, if that were the only circumstance open. Okay. I'm going to skip some of the ritual ideas about the Sandikais and choosing a good moil and the issues of backing out of Mila that you'll see in Reish Samach Dal, the end of Sif Aleph in the Ramah. Very important halachas about the Chayshu Mishpat angle of Mila. About when you hire a moil, when could you back out, when can you not back out, when if you made a kinyan, didn't make a kinyan. So I have to skip over for to save a bit of time. Okay. According to you mean what would he say shelo b'shas atchak if you did it already?
No,
I don't know.
No,
that was not the issue.
Right?
Well, the b'shas atchak case was case where they're not asking the shiloh. Right, the b'shas atchak case is where the couple is never going to ask that shiloh. So I don't know what he would say if someone would say, my irreligious pediatrician did Mila on my son, should I do a Tavis Tambris? I don't know what he would answer to that. That's a different channel. Okay, Mila and Priya, I hope I did justice to it on the board, right? The methodology, some people tell me they're still confused. The classic way of doing Mila is you pull down the skin and you cut, it snaps back, and then you still have left a little gushy skin called the Arpriya. And the classic way to do that is instead of cutting it, they would rip it, usually with a fingernail. Sometimes it's really tight to a few scissors, and then you push it back, and then when you bandage it up, it basically grows into the skin area and it's smooth. After you cut the arlo, which is the outer skin, which looks the same as the skin of the gid, underneath that you have a thin layer of skin that's called the arpriya, which is a very thin consistency, like a membrane on top of what we call the atara, or it's called, I think, the corona. And that typically would not be cut, it would be ripped and pushed back, and then they would bandage it still here so that it would not fall back. Otherwise it would just flop back because they didn't even cut it. So that was the major controversy about the Tziporin, that some of Machbid do three of the Tziporin, and some of Machbid doctors do it two steps because they first did the Mila and then do the Priya, as opposed to what many Molin do is they stick in to give a little graphics here, they have one skin over here and one skin over here. One skin over here, one skin over here. But these skins are glued onto the atara with a natural Rabbanishlam glue. So what they do is they stick in a probe over here, a metal flat piece. They go around to pry off the Oha Priya from the atara, and then they take a clint. Don't get scared, it's not gumko, and it's just a little like scissors like thing. It's just an extended finger, right? To hold these two skins, they pull down the skins together, so that it comes out like this. And then when you cut,
You cut through both skins, and then when it snaps back, so you have nothing left.
Wait,
that's called Mila Upriya Bebasacha. That's what many Moel, and especially in the non-Hasidic world,
do. Wait, did this case where it's glued on, is that... Is that a normal case?
Yeah, that's the standard. The Ar HaPriya, it's fused onto the Atara. But you could break that connection. It's not glue with, you know, super glue. You just stick in a probe and you break it. So that's what they do. If you notice, next time you have a little background, next time if you're not squeamish, you look at a standard Mila, this is what's done. You'll see him do that, and you'll see him pull. I remember Rabbi Yagin in 10th grade told us that by Hasidish HaMoelim, no preparation, but the Mila takes a long time. By the Litvish HaMoelim, tons of preparation, but the Mila takes a second. Because it depends how they're doing it. Either they're preparing everything in advance and cutting both, and then boom, it's all done. And if you're Hasidish, so then you're going to follow the stricter reading of the sources. You're going to do Mila first, but you're not probing, so there's no Hachana here. So you're just pulling, cutting, and then you're ripping. So it takes, whatever, another 10 seconds. Someone was mechabed me with sandakos. I don't know why, but that was whatever. I was the Rebbe in a bungalow colony, so I got an eye view of Mila, and I saw every single thing that Rabbi Tendel said not to do. Because it was Chassidish HaMoel, so he did Mila and Priya Shaloba Basachas with the Tziporen. He used the chalas that was unsterilized, and he spit wine all over the Mila. He did Mitzitza Bepeh, all the things that you're not supposed to do. This is a... Baruch Hashem, the baby's doing well. As a matter of fact, the baby was, as the Moel pointed out to me, he was actually the grandson, I think, of one of the Rebbes. He said the baby was a shtikla noilid mol, so it was a complicated bris, and also a shtikla hypospadias. That means that the opening, the urinal opening, was a little bit not pamakim. But it wasn't extreme. It was type 2 of Rabbi Tendler that you don't need surgery for. So they went through the regular meal. That's the extreme version. That's where it's mamish on the git itself. Here it was on the atara, just a little bit off. But it makes the Moel's job more complicated. Anyway, whatever. This is the way Mila was done. I'm not taking sides on this issue. Everybody heard Rabbi Tendler's positions, which are very important. I'm just pointing out that there are many out there who don't follow that shear. Okay. All right. And now I just saw the Moel spitting on it. I said, why are you spitting on the baby? And I looked at the Shulchan Aruch. That's what all the Moel used to do. The mezalf and esayayin. They used to have like alcohol, like an antiseptic. Just to put it in their mouth and they spit on the baby. Alright. Different ways. Okay. I just wanted to finish up one very important topic. I think we'll break, or maybe we'll meet subsequent weeks. Forgive me for going. Usually, I started teaching at Stern, so usually you give back to back classes, but I can't do it on Wednesday because I teach then. So I'm jamming in a little more now in one session. The Mechaber writes that you cut the Or HaOrla and you peel back the Or HaPriya. So now, of course, you cut the Or HaOrla and you peel back the Or HaPriya. Now, the Mechaber never said you have to peel back the Or HaPriya. He said it probably can cut it too, which is why the Rov HaPoskim assume there's nothing wrong with Mila Priya Vavasachas. Yeah, some Moelim try to make everyone happy that they leave a drop of Or HaPriya left that they don't cut, and then they push that back. Bitsi Porin. So everybody's happy. The Pischei Tshuva quotes, very, very important, this is Mamish, very important, in terms of getting a qualified Mohel, not just someone in the yellow pages under M. The Chamuri Daniel, Iksav Yad. Usually, anything that Chamuri Daniel says, Iksav Yad, is like, Mamish, it's in the Kodesh Kadoshim. Very, very important comment. I think it came out. Rabbi Shechter noted on a tape that it did come out. He says the following. Sefer Chamuri Daniel, Iksav Yad, meaning, apparently it came out already, recently. So apparently what he said in his day, some Moelim used to do the following. Some Moelim used to, pull down the Or HaMila, leaving the Or HaPriya, but they wouldn't pull down enough. Let's say the Atara is a half a centimeter. So you got to pull down a half a centimeter, or if you want it to be all clear, you really want to be careful, a little more than half a centimeter. They would pull down a quarter of a centimeter. They would cut. The skin would snap back. And would still cover part of the atar. No matter. They still have priya to do. So they would take the lower skin, rip it off, push back the rest of the Or HaOrla together with it,
and then bandage it, and when the baby heals, he would never know the difference. Ah, but you didn't cut off the Or HaMila. So maybe you weren't yotzei the mitzvah. Maybe the kid's still an oral, even though he doesn't look like an oral. So this is a massive dispute, mamish the pricing. I thought that everyone agreed to this machaber, the literal reading of the machaber. But if you look at the Sefer Brish, sure enough, three sheetahs. Bikitzer, leaving aside, I'm just giving you the case. What's the halacha if I'm a big giant and I rip off all the skins, push them back, and then bandage it, and I don't bother cutting anything? Right? What's the halacha? No, I was meisir the Or HaOrla without chituch. The mechaber says you're supposed to cut it, and that's what we do. But is that ma'akev, or that's just convenient that if you're going to push it back, so it might fall back? So Rav Moshe Feinstein in a few places in Chelek Dalit Or Chaim, Yerodea Simon Mem, and also Chelek Ches. I'm not sure where the tshuva is, but in Chelek Ches in Yerodea, the last Chelek. By Chelek Ches, I mean volume Ches. I think it's Chelek Dalit Simon Mem is in volume Ches. Chelek Dalit Simon Mem. That's already the last volume. So he assumes that you must have chituch. He recognizes that out there there are people who hold you don't have to, but he thinks that you do need chituch. He wrote this tshuva to, I think, Rabbi Tendler's grandson-in-law, some very Rappaport, from Eretz-Yisro. There's a Rappaport in the Tendler family. I'm not sure how it works. Okay, whatever it is. So he assumes that you have to have chituch. The Maram Shik, based on a Chassam Sofer and the Divrei Chaim of Sons, I think, and the Yeshuas Malko, they all assume that all you need is Hasara. It's not convenient to do Hasara, but you don't. It's not Ma'akev Demil. You'll be Yotzei Mitzvah with Hasara.
What do you mean by Hasara?
You know, removal. Hasara, yeah. And the Chochma Sodom and the Pri Yitzchak, they go like Reb Moshe, but they seem to go even more. The Pri Yitzchak writes, that, if I'm not mistaken, I have to double check this, that the kid's an oral. Reb Moshe, I'm not sure if he'd be prepared to say the kid's an oral. It could be just say not yotzei mitzvah. I was mistaken what Reb Moshe meant. So it could be we have three shittas. Hasara is good enough to be yotzei mitzvah, the shittas of Maram Shik. Hasara is not the mitzvah, but if you do it, the kid's not an oral, because bottom line, that Torah is exposed. And which maybe is the position of Reb Moshe, I'm not sure. And Pri Yitzchak seems to take the extreme position, which maybe is not extreme, maybe that's where we should pass, and I don't know, that you're not yotzei mitzvah and the kid's an oral. So what that means is you got to make sure you have a moel mumche who cuts off enough skin. And Rabbi Tendler pointed out that Chaviv Olav Minig Rav Katzenstein, that he takes a look at the Aver, he puts a blue dot right underneath the Atara when the skin is as is, and then when he pulls, he knows exactly where to cut. Most Molin don't do that. They do estimation. They say, well, what's the harm of making a blue dot? All you'll do is be able to be out to the Mitzvah Mahadran without any problem. Certainly if you're doing it freehand, so that could easily be a problem. But even if you're using the Mogain shield, you still, how much skin do you know to take there? So usually it's not a problem, but as the Rabbi Tendler, I don't know, he sometimes jokes around. So he, when he quoted this Chamuri Daniel, he says, yeah, that's the way half of the Molin do it. Meaning, half an hour I'm doing it wrong, because he didn't train in the New York School of Mila, which Rabbi Tendler ran, until they shut him down because too many Moalim were staying in New York area. So it was all a saga rules in total. So he, I think, correctly is a little bit upset about this. He says, "Here I was, I made a training school for Mila, so I finally got people doing it right, and then they ran me out of business." So it was through Mount Sinai, but it no longer exists. So now Moalim just train, whatever. Okay, so that's an important issue, that to get a moral mumcha, because as Pinchas already indicating, and how are you going to know? So that's right. How are you going to know? So that's why it is a serious issue. So you got to make sure it's done right the first time. Yeah.
Based on the Rashi Megillah, I read Megillah earlier. It says over there, if you leave part of the oral,
let me delay that. That's the last topic we'll discuss, just to finish off the simon. The Sifhei, the Shulchan Aruch discusses what's called Tzitzim HaMa'akim and Tzitzim She'en HaMa'akim. So we'll go back to our picture, and
redraw it. Here's here's a picture of the Aver fully clear of any skin that shouldn't be there. So the Gemara says in Shabbos that there are tzitzim ha-ma'akrim and tzitzim she'en ha-ma'akrim, meaning pieces of skin that ruin the milah and pieces of skin that don't. Pieces of skin that ruin the milah are things that cover rov ha-torah. That don't ruin the milah, that don't cover rov ha-torah. So what's the halacha of these things? So the Mechaber seemingly indicates, and this seems to be the position of the Rambam, there's a whole stick of Torah Griskarov to explain this Rambam, that if you're still involved in the milah, so heder mitzvah, try to cut off everything. Once you're foresh, if you just have a little skin left, for bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos, don't touch it, because that would be chavala shavol tzarek. In the Griskarov terminology, you cannot have heder mitzvah unless you're doing the mitzvah. That's his lipshah. That's the Rambam, which seems to be the Shita from the Chabad. The Ramah says during the week, you always remove all the skin, regardless of whether you're involved now in the milo or you notice it later. But on Shabbos, you're only allowed to remove the bits of skin that are not ma'akev if you're still involved in the milo. But if you're no longer involved in the milo, you notice it later, you cannot take it off on Shabbos, you have to wait till the week. So the Ramah says the B'chol, you always take it off on Shabbos, you only take the tzitzim she'en ma'akim off if you are not poreish from the Ma'is Amilia. The Shagasari at Kodavar Pitzchei Tshuva wants to pass them like the Rambam. It is alright, they're not going to override the Ramah, but if the kid's a little weak, they'll forget about it. The Shagasari at Kodavar Pitzchei Tshuva, if the kid's a little weak, just follow the Rambam, and if it's ain't a Ma'ake, it's not Ma'ake. What's the Atara? Rov Atara is Ma'ake, if it covers. Miyat Atara is not Ma'ake. So one shot in the Atara is this here. The whole head of the orla was called in the medical literature, I think, the corona. Another sheet of the atara is what's called the chut hamakis. This ring over here that goes around, that's the atara. That's a massive distance. I could have a child who has this whole area covered, but rov ha-atara, if you take the lenient definition, is uncovered. But if you take the stringent definition, the whole atara is covered. So the halacha is spelled out by the baby. Yeah. It's either the whole area on top or just the ring. Where
or changes, just the ring.
Just the ring. Yeah. So if I have the ring covered, but the rest of it is not covered, so according to the first definition, Rov HaTara is uncovered. According to the second definition, the Rov HaTara is totally covered. La Halacha v'machmir. For both positions, and you have to make sure that the mohel clears the ring too. Okay, and getting back to what we said earlier, cuts off enough skin to clear the ring.
Did Rabbi Kassenstein draw the blue dot on Shabbos too?
No, I don't think so. Probably not. That's a good point. Probably a good point. I don't know if you, I don't think you can call that Tzorchei Amila. Okay, the final halacha in this regard is as follows. At least that we're going to discuss. Once the Amila is done properly, sometimes the skin grows back. So what do you do then? So the basic halacha, although there are different shittas on this, but that which is accepted, the shittas haramah, and although the taz is mafakbek, but this is the way you paskin, based on a gemara with the addition of the Truma Sedeshin, as follows. If the aver is totally covered by skin that grew back, even though the mila was done right, such that the whole atara is covered, even b'shas kishui, right? Even when the aver is erect, if the whole atara is totally covered, because the skin grew totally back, even when the aver is b'shas kishui, so then midrabanan, you have to cut again. Rabbi Akiva Eger, I think, points out you don't make a brach on that. Tol shayla brach samar sign. You don't make a brach on that, but you have to cut again. If, on the other hand, the skin grew back such that b'shas kishui, even part of the atara is revealed, even if it's not rov, because here we're only dealing with marasayin, so we'll make a, even if part of it is revealed, so then you only have to push back if possible. Now if you push back the skin, sometimes even bandage it again so it shouldn't grow back again. Okay, so this is something it sounds like it's just for the molim. Wrong. This is for the parents. Because I'm convinced, judging from people that I spoke to beforehand, and I think it's chaval that the molim don't tell people this, that it is not uncommon for skin to, because the basically anatomy of the baby and the size of the aver, that it could easily grow back.
So a lot of times it will be revealed b'shas kishui, but you still got to push it back. Forget about halacha for practical reasons. A person wants to walk around when he gets older, and it's much harder to detach the adhesion because it'll stick. When the kid's a kid, so the moel has to teach the parents that when you diaper the baby, constantly push back the skin if it's flopping over the aratar. Sometimes you have a situation where you don't even see the gid. It covers the whole, swallows up the whole gid again, unless it's pekishui. So it's a mitzvah lefarsim. That's why I try to give it up in the Chazara Chaburis as well. I don't know, I think Moalim and not Mefarsim this so much. So what the parents should do, it follows the Shulchan Aruch, you keep pushing back, and as the kid gets older and older, so then it grows in nicely, and there's no, you don't have to do it anymore. But that's a practical application of this last Seif of the Maritime. Okay, the other questions I'll take offline. Forgive the arichas, and maybe next week on Tuesday, the same time, we'll finish up the rest of Hilchas Mila, and the week after we'll do Geiris, the first session, and the week after we'll do Geiris, the second session.
We're meeting next Tuesday.